Here we go again. It's time to talk. I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people will never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
Part of the conversation yourself. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Phone lines are open. You can pick up the phone 0818 104 106. You can text or WhatsApp 0868 104 106. You can also voice note if you will, if you wish. One story that won't make the print editions of the papers on Leaside is yet another death on our roads. And this one is a 60-year-old motorcyclist died in a crash down around Bantier yesterday evening. It was a single vehicle crash, 6:45 in the Bantier area. Very sad, the tragedies and the amount of them on our roads. Of course, over a week or 10 days ago, we also had another young lad. So this was the chap yesterday was in his 60 years old, but you'll know the story of poor old Jake Mulcahy from Killa. He died following a collision between a car and an articulated lorry near Middleton, 7:30 in the morning. And that awful incident then on Cars Hill, the back end of last week. I will come back to issues like that, because a big, huge response actually to not just, you know, driving habits, but driving conditions as well, and roads, and, you know, what the right speed is and stuff like that. I mean, I know we were talking about it. I won't dwell on it now, but we did have National Slowdown Day the back end of last week. And they give some very good examples of the crazy speeds that people are doing. I'll say no more about it for now, except that one person who was snaffled or nabbed during the National Slowdown Day was a driver doing double the speed limit down by Castle Martyr on Friday. He was doing an incredible, ridiculous 194 kilometres an hour. In a 100-kilometre zone, 194, like a bullet out of a gun, what? Anyway, more on that, text 0868104106. But thankfully, a lot of the papers are dominated by a blazing Sunday. Blazy Sunday, as opposed to, you know, lazy, sunny afternoon by the Kinks. But the country enjoyed the hottest day of the year so far. That wouldn't be hard, I suppose, to be only in April. That's a story making the Daily Star today. They're talking about the crowds of people who were teeming to the beaches. The sunshine brought crowds to the beaches for the first time this year, and the guards were reporting heavier than usual traffic, particularly yesterday, and all of it down to the good weather as people flocked to enjoy it. And I suppose the 99s were very, very popular. Maybe the first big weekend of sales of 99 ice creams. But you probably, if you're heading west now in weather like this, I mean, it's an amazing thing. I was down around Ballinskelligs and the Rianroar Beach, which I think is a nicer beach, and there was two dolphins really close to the shore. They were like maybe 50, 60 feet offshore. They weren't in trouble or struggling or anything. They were doing fine, but it was fairly shallow water. Maybe they liked the warmer water. They were playing and frolicking, and they were trying to nab birds and gulls and gannets and feeding for fish. And everybody was enthralled to watch these two dolphins play. I was talking to some of the boatmen down around Port Magee then, that were in and out to Blaskets. They're not landing on Blaskets, sorry, Skelligs. They're not landing on Skelligs yet, but they're going around the two islands. And they're saying that there are basking sharks out there as well. And I remember a couple of years back seeing minke whales travelling over to Dingle. So it was amazing at the weekend to see so many people outdoors and enjoying it. But we're never too far from somebody who wants to put a damper on our fun. And The Independent this morning says the world's climate is the wettest, the hottest, and the deadliest than it's ever been. And it's showing extreme weather records and extreme weather patterns continuing across Europe. And you have to wonder, if we hit 18 degrees today, guys, what do you think of it? Is that to do with global warming? Is that to do with climate change? Or is it just a nice bit of weather and a nice bit of sunshine? Text 0868104106. There is tragedy, though. This has not to do with the sea, but a swimming pool, a birthday party in a hotel. And tributes have been paid now to a little boy at the age of 7 who died and drowned in a hotel swimming pool tragedy. Young Shay Lynch, age 7, from County Clare, got into difficulty. It's the front page making many of the red tops today. The Mirror has it. He got into difficulty attending a birthday party at the Lakeside Hotel in Killaloe. There was all sorts of people came to his aid. He was recovered from the water, unconscious. Efforts were made to try and save his life at the poolside, but it failed. And the family must be absolutely shocked. Absolutely tragic story. involving a little 7-year-old boy at a birthday party. And as I was mentioning, with regards to our roads, this is kind of scary, but very important. The serious injuries in road crashes, the figures that have been released have been inaccurate and wildly inaccurate, according to the front of the Independent today. The number of people seriously injured in road traffic accidents is almost double the figures that were previously being recorded. And this is according to the RSA, because they're now using hospital data as well as Garda figures. They're not adding them twice. They're just combining them to give us a more accurate picture, say, between 2014 and 2022. Instead of the figure of 10,500 serious injuries and road crashes, the more accurate one is not 10,500, it's over 18,000. I mean, that is absolutely scary. And there is one graph making the Independent today, going back to 2014, and it's showing a steady rise in serious injuries regarding road traffic accidents, and also a steady rise, small reduction in 2020 in the amount of people hospitalized. But other than that, that's only kind of one blip downwards, and it climbs again in 2021 and 2022. I can only imagine the 2023 and 2024 will continue that upward climb. And then something that we spoke about on air last week, and keep those calls coming, particularly if you're somebody with a blue badge. It seems as if an awful lot of people who have a disability and a blue badge don't speak up and don't take on other drivers because they were afraid and in fear of violence if they approach parking offenders or those that flout the parking rules, particularly for those who have a blue badge and others, greedy motorists who just aren't thinking, who are ignorant and don't give a damn. So 88% of disabled motorists say that they're in fear of violence when they approach parking flouters. Spoke to a few last week on the air who are not afraid of approaching somebody who's parking where they shouldn't have been. But anyway, the vast majority of those with a disability are. Fear of physical and verbal abuse were the top reasons disabled drivers stated that they would not approach drivers parked illegally in disabled spaces. Like 88% said it's too dangerous to approach other people. They would be hostile. There would be verbal abuse. It could get physical. And for somebody with a disability, some disabilities, of course, you wouldn't be able to defend yourselves. Text 0868-104-106 on that one. And then we're never too far from a story involving driving or the cost of driving. Everywhere you turn, of course, there's added, like insurance isn't coming down. No, it's not. Price of cars, VRT is still there, even though we're breaching and flouting. That European Union law doesn't apply to any other country except Ireland, VRT, to the best of my knowledge. And we will edge closer and finally get to €2 per litre when it comes to petrol and diesel, because there is one more excise increase in August. And the government faces fresh calls now, falling on deaf ears, not to increase excise and tax again. It's funny, really, isn't it? Because I'm hearing that energy costs are coming down. Certainly, there should be a very visible reduction in people's gas and electricity bills. But yet, of course, petrol, I mean, they just don't want us driving fossil fuel cars. They just don't. It's electric or bust, really, isn't it? And then the front of the Sun this morning is, the news at the back end of last week is that the 48 children who never came home for nearly 43 years, it was being said that someone amongst those inside in the nightclub started the fire deliberately and maliciously. That was not true. That was a lie. We now know that they were all innocents and it wasn't started deliberately. The fire, of course, resulted in the inquest at the back end of last week saying that all of them died by unlawful killing. So that means now that the government is again, and this is according to Micheál Martin, looking and taking into consideration, serious consideration, a new financial redress scheme for the families of the 48. I suppose there were some payouts years and years ago, but that was under the cloud of the fire being started deliberately. We have a brand new story and scenario now that needs to be looked at again, up to and including a full state apology tomorrow for their long and painful wait for justice for the families of the 48 children who never came home. And the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, is expected to give that tomorrow. And of course, politicians are never far from the news. You're aware of the gathering outside minister's home, with the wake of a series of, as they call in the Mirror and the Mail this morning, the sinister confrontations and the attack on Roderick O'Gorman's home. And they're saying, take the balaclava out of our politics. Of course, this is a direct poke and a finger pointing at the far right, who, of course, were involved in the protest outside the Minister Roderick O'Gorman's home. Helen McEntee now is under more and more pressure to act. Gardaí were present. There were no arrests there, to the best of my knowledge. The Gardaí just kept a close eye. And then ultimately, the protest, people with masks and balaclavas. I would think that in spite of any kind of protest you want to make or any message you want to make or anything that you want to say or be heard, I think taking it to somebody's family home is I don't know whether you'll agree or disagree with me, but I believe is a step too far. But the Mail then also talks about, and a lot of it has to do with our borders, of course, and the amount of people coming into the country, whether legally or illegally, and that we just haven't got room anymore, and it's costing us an absolute fortune. But the Mail then catalogues all of, they call it Ireland's burning. And they talk about all of the different establishments that have been linked to arson attacks on buildings that would have been used for refugee accommodation. And they go back to January of 2023. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 that I can see here on a list alone. Which one of them actually includes from the summer of last year, Gaelscoil Iriardáin in Ballincollig in County Cork, but it's everywhere. Lots up the west of Ireland, I have to say. Quite an amount of them in Dublin, but I see a lot then from the likes of Galway. I see a lot then from the likes of Donegal, an awful lot in Dublin, Kildare, County Longford, County Wicklow, areas like that. They call it the catalogue of horror, the burning of buildings. This would be hotels or guest houses, as you know. And you know, because we had the Dublin riots, which really had to do with more rioting and thuggery and looting than anything else. Do you remember at the time that the Gardaí borrowed a water cannon from the PSNI after the Dublin riots in November, thinking that they might have to use water cannon? They never did, actually. The water cannon never got used because we never had anything like the Dublin riots since then where they would have turned the water on people. But they're giving it back now. They've given back the water cannon. I don't know whether they should have held on to it and bought one for themselves. You never know when they might need to use it. But then again, you're talking about things like from cannons to shotguns. How can it happen? It's the front of the Irish Times today. How can it happen that a pump-action shotgun that was seized by the Gardaí, which should have been in secure storage as evidence, got back into the hands of people involved in serious organised crime? It was seized for a second time during another separate operation between feuding criminal gangs. Criminals found with a shotgun that the guards seized in 2009. It's bizarre. How did it get up? How did it get out of the Garda lockup and back into the hands of criminals? And then into the hands of young ones, not guns, but perhaps not as dangerous, but dangerous nonetheless. Smartphones. You know, because I was talking about this some months ago, that we're going to see a raft, because they're pledging now, which will probably result in introducing a raft of very, very hardline measures aimed at a smartphone ban on anyone under the age of 13. 13 and under, banned from smartphones, banned from anything. I mean, like you're never going to be 100% sure as to what a child has in their hands, whether it's a smartphone or whether it's just an old-fashioned phone that has no access to the internet or all of the different apps and what have you. But this is the logic behind the pledge, because they're unsafe. The younger you are, the more unsafe they are. So that's one of them. But they also want to take on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and X. They're saying that these platforms are a bigger challenge than smoking or the smoking ban. They're going to spend millions of euro in fines to fight the curb of the influence of the TikToks and the Facebooks and the Instagrams and what have you. Good luck with that one, I suppose. I don't know whether this is electioneering, whether they're just making all of these promises to look good as we head into the locals and then a general election at some start stage. But I know we'll talk about weather, and I probably should have mentioned this earlier on. I was talking about, you know, it's wetter, we're getting more fierce weather, and all of this across Europe, we're seeing things happening that were never happening before at a rate like they are now. And it much has to do, they say, with climate change and global warming. was asking the question, if we get 18 degrees today, is it something that we should be blessed and thankful for, or we should be worried? Should we be scared that we shouldn't be getting 18 degrees in the back end of April? But anyway, we're a small little country, and I don't know whether it really matters on an international stage. When you look at America, when you look at China, when you look at India and the pollution, and they just don't give a damn, but yet this small little island does its best. Or do we? I don't know whether we do or not. 52% of people say that they, this is like 50% of people are saying that they don't separate their recycling properly. It's World Earth Day, and a Repack survey said that only half say that they always separate their recycling into the correct bins at home. And only 28% of people say that they always separate their recycling when they're out and about. The other 50% have a more laissez-faire about recycling. They don't and of course, the problem with it, and I've done tours of these huge plants. I remember doing a tour of Country Clean years ago. Never seen such a scientific process up there with regards to waste management, waste separation. But tainted recycling, when it goes into the huge, big vats of recycling, taints the entire run, and the whole lot then gets rejected when it goes overseas. A lot of it goes, I think, to India. I think some of it goes to Germany. But for those that put tainted refuse into regular recycling, it spoils it then for thousands of others. So it's not just the minor recycling errors. You get away with bits of that. It's like the 50% of people that don't take it seriously at all. And then there's some other interesting stories. This is a UK one. I don't know whether we'll ever catch on here. I never knew that they changed the sick note term in the UK in 2010. They renamed it as fit notes, which seems like a kind of a double negative to me. A sick note and a fit note, it doesn't make sense, because a fit note is I'm fit to come to work, whereas in actual fact the reality of it is here's my fit note, I can't go to work, if you know what I mean. But now they're talking about introducing an app, because they have a big problem in the UK with the amount of people on sick notes. Like, there's 11 million in any given year. There's twice as many people in the UK going out on sick notes now than there was 8 or 9 years ago. And you have to wonder, a lot of it has to do, it's not actually physical sickness all of the time now. A lot of it has to do with psychological, mental, psychiatric issues, much of it to do with depression, huge increase in those areas. So twice as many go out. But now they're introducing an app where you apparently can go out on the sick with an app. It's been designed, you'll be asked questions rather than having to go to a doctor. It'd be like a chatbot doctor would do it for you instead. So it's the changing world we live in. If you're a Spice Girls fan, happy to know that for her 50th, all of the Spice Girls got back together in a star-studded 50th birthday bash. I'd say there was no money spared for Posh Spice and her 50th birthday, where all of the Spice Girls performed. And Mel B, for you Spice Girls fans, hinted then that there is a possibility of a future Spice Girl reunion gig. They did come back together, didn't they? But was it the case that Posh Bex didn't go? I think there was 4 out of 5 of them. I might have dreamt that. But anyway, Beck Together is a headline making the Sun today for those of you that love the Spice Girls. A hint, perhaps. Never know. Might come to this parish in the not-too-distant future.
Call Neil now. 0818
104 106. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And you pick up the phone, text 0868 104 106. Didn't get an opportunity to do this on Friday, but I'm mad keen to talk to Cork-born Lelia Doolan, who's doing an incredible thing very soon. She is literally approaching, or perhaps has approached, her 90th birthday, and she's going to throw herself out of a plane, thankfully with the parachute on board, a tandem parachute. She was interviewed by RSVP Live. She says she won't be on her own. She hopes to be strapped, to a big strapping lad who'll help her on the way down. She joins me by WhatsApp. Lelia, good morning.
Hello, good morning to you.
I will.
I'll be strapped to a big hairy lad, I hope.
anybody trying to talk you out of it?
Not at all. Yes. But listen, half the world are, in this country anyway, and everywhere else I'd say in the world, are living to be a lot more than 90. So I don't think it's anything terribly important
to be thinking
about.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
Should you not have thought about doing this in your 50s or 60s, though, no?
I had other things to be doing then. I had all kinds of other things to be doing. Yeah. No. It's and the important thing about this is not that I'm 90 or anything like that. The important thing is that it's for a charity, and that is Doctors Without Borders, who are one of the great, great charities at the moment, trying to keep people alive in war-torn places all over the world. And God knows there are enough places in a bad situation.
You got anyway, that right. So, well, fair play to you. You have a social conscience and you're doing well already, over $9,000. We're going to see if we can drive that even higher for you. But when is the dive? When is the jump? When is the skydive?
The dive, honestly. Yeah, it's on the 6th of May, 2 weeks away today. Right. I think that's it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Monday. It's the bank holiday Monday. Bank holiday Monday. It's over in Offaly. The Irish Parachute Club have a place there and they offer the opportunity to people like me to jump out of planes and otherwise, you know, do whatever they find interesting. I'm looking forward to it, I must say. I mean, it'll be interesting to feel what a bird feels like, even for 5-10 seconds, you know.
Or a stone or a rock falling from a height.
Ah, well, now, come on. Yeah, not quite the same thing. If you can open your arms wide and embrace the experience, which is what I hope I'll do.
Listen, I think it's a wonderful opportunity for you. It would have been great if you'd done it the weekend just gone with the glorious weather.
Well, let's start. Get your audience, whatever age they are, get them doing whatever Buddhist prayers or other prayers they have for a calm day. Because if it's too windy, no jump. So, or it'll be postponed. It'll be postponed to another day. So just, it'd be great if it could be on the 6th of May. And so if everybody will...
Start manifesting, isn't it? Start manifesting.
Energy.
Yeah. Positive
exactly.
Energy
do,
for
do
good weather.
Manifesting. Yeah. That's it, exactly.
So have you been doing any practice? I hear that your brother Paddy says you should start practicing by jumping off the bed.
Oh, this is codology here. Paddy is a noodle. Yeah, not at all. I'm not practicing by jumping off the bed. Will you stop? I'm practicing by getting on with the every day and hopefully getting there in good order.
And you will too. Fair play to you. You will. And you'll raise the
money.
What
about you? Are you ever going to do anything like that?
I tell you something. On two or three occasions in the past, I have funked a skydive.
Oh,
and I have also funked a bungee jump. So I'm a coward.
Really?
Yeah. By comparison to you, I'm a yellow belly coward.
I wouldn't believe it. Not for a moment. I think, listen, I always like the enjoyment of doing something which I haven't done before. And that is really what this is about. So it's just a bit of enjoyment, hopefully for a good cause.
Have you challenged yourself all of your life? I mean, you were born in Cork, remember, in 1934. Did you work a lot of your life within RTE then, from the very early days of RTE, was it?
Yes. No, I did. I worked in RTE for about, I don't know, on and off. I worked there permanently for about 5 or 6 years, and I had before that I had worked as a freelance doing various, you know, bits and pieces of acting and singing and so forth since it began in 1961. So about 8 years altogether in the early days. But then along with a couple of other pals, three of us, Bob Quinn and Jack Dowling and I, we resigned in 69. That is before you were born, Neil.
No, I'm afraid it wasn't. There was several.
All right, well, never mind.
Yeah.
Early enough. And so, yes, and I did various things then after that. So did everybody else, you know.
Was there a particular reason for the resignation, do you mind me asking, Lelia?
Of course there was. Look at RTE and the state of RTE now, where advertising has ruined the station.
Go away.
This is, you know, the country has a very strange attitude towards the truth. That is, it likes on the one hand for us to be pure and beautiful and remember our roots and our heritage and the testimony of the great people who went before us.
Yeah.
And to, you know, nurture and protect all of that and tell the truth. And on the other hand, to sell advertising. I've been listening to your advertising that goes on in the interstices between your bits of program.
Yeah.
And so this is the national broadcaster. Anyway, so we objected to the fact that it was bowdlerizing and, you know, changing and getting very fearful about telling certain truths in favour of Helena Rubinstein being selling horror face creams in those days.
Ah,
and
so you were believers that that a state broadcaster, a public broadcaster, yes, should not have any commercial element then?
Well, we just felt that if we want a state broadcaster, we should be prepared to pay for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Irish love to get things by halves, you know.
Yeah.
We'll get it, and we won't, but we won't really pay for it. We'll, you know.
And of course, that was 1968. And you look at the state, yes, of RT now in 2023, 2024, yes, where it's been held with, you know, quite, yeah, an amount of disquiet, yeah, to say the least, and distrust. Yeah.
There are great people and there are great programs, and one mustn't overlook that. RTE is a state institution with wonderful people working in it.
But were you head of Light Entertainment for a period there?
I was.
And do you recall any of the particular programs you piloted or set up?
The Late Late Show was one of my programs. Yeah.
Was it?
Gay Byrne. Yeah.
How did that come about then?
Well, I suppose somebody said, we'll have her. That was it. People just put their finger on you and said, would you do that? And you said, okay, sure I will. But we started, much more importantly, 7 days. Myself and Owen Harris, the mad lunatic.
Corkman, lovely guy.
Yes, yeah. Corkman.
So that
exactly
would have been the equivalent, for people that don't know, that would have been something similar, if you like, to prime time as such, really.
It began prime time.
Yeah.
Dick Hill and Owen Harris were two young directors who had just come on board, and I was the producer, and the three of us, we created 7 days, which was indeed the forerunner to all of those current affairs programmes. It was important. It is important. Prime time is an important programme. You know, mostly now it seems studio-based, but it also does interesting documentary work.
Well, it does prime time investigates. Yeah, it does. But
yeah,
so exactly, when you say the Late Late Show, did a bunch of you get into a room and say, we got to come up with something that will be entertaining? Originally, of course, night.
Not at all. I was not the producer. Gay was the producer, which is very important to remember. He wasn't just somebody who turned up on a Saturday night and did whatever was set out before him. Gay decided upon who, with this team, obviously, people like Pam Collins, who was a great researcher, and other members of the research team, and the director, who was Adrian, whatever his name is. Mm. I can't remember his second name. Anyway, lovely, lovely producer, director. And Gay produced what was to be, in effect, the really current affairs, biggest current affairs programme of the state.
Yes, yeah.
In my opinion.
It was,
You know.
It broken off a lot of taboos, didn't it? It shone a light into Ireland in so many different ways. Yeah. But were you part of the decision-making of putting the programme together?
Not at all.
The
Not
idea?
I was there to say, I'm protecting this, I am supporting this, I am making sure this happens every Saturday night. Gay didn't need anybody to tell him what to do. Gay knew what to do. And I absolutely respected that, as you would.
Yeah.
You know, you're not in charge of the blessed and holy day-to-day affair. You're just making sure it happens.
He was a fierce hard worker, not unlike yourself. I remember reading years ago that he would go in, say, about 7 o'clock in the morning into the radio building, put all his bits and pieces together, 2 hours prep for the 9 o'clock kickoff of the Gay Byrne Hour.
Yep.
And then 10 o'clock, he would walk from the radio building to TV Centre on a daily basis.
Right.
This is Monday through Friday, preparing for the Late Late Show for the Saturday night.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. He did all of that. Yeah, he was, well, people who work in television, I have to tell you, whether you're an engineer or a lighting man or a junior researcher or a director or a producer, you're a bloody worker. That's what you do.
Yeah.
You know, as you know from your work, where you are there, I don't know, are you based in Cork City?
Yes,
where are you
based? Just out in the Corraheen suburbs, out in the western suburbs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know that you've got to come in early. You've got to have your pieces of paper in whatever the hell order you work it in place. And you have to have your team ready to give you a bit of background so that you know who the hell is coming on next.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
how the hell did you know who I was? Not at all. I hadn't a clue. So Seamus says to you, here's this dame. She's coming on. She's doing this skydive. You could talk to her. You see, so that's all it's about. It's all about doing the preparation, getting on and having a little bit of you know, pizzazz yourself, which obviously you do have.
Well, it's great talking to somebody who was one of the foundation blocks, really, of the national broadcaster from the early 1960s. That's a pleasure, because you and others like you were the original building blocks that get us, you know, where we are today. And commercial radio came along. I mean, you do understand commercial radio does need to take advertising, because we wouldn't be state-funded like RTE. So it's a different beast.
Yes, I do. I actually have shares in Clare FM, believe it or not. Because my parents are Clare people, were Clare people, and I still have
a
great connection with Clare.
Do you think that ultimately television will just disappear? The younger generations now, they're not into terrestrial or regular traditional TV. It's all Netflix and Prime and, YouTube and stuff like that.
Yeah, people slowly grow up, I suppose, you know. And even if you start out, are you still there?
Yeah, hearing every word.
Oh yeah, you are. Okay. No, I heard a bit of music going on there.
Just WhatsApp. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
No. I do believe that young people have absolutely got a social conscience. I do believe that they're out on the streets about Gaza at the moment. They know what's what. They're not fooled by the stupidity of social media, which are absolutely...
I hope you're right.
Dreadful. A lot of it is dreadful. Anyway, no. Well, of course people have to talk to each other, but it would be much nicer if, you know, you could put down the damn phone from time to time and just talk over the wall.
It's a milestone around people's necks these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, you see... In the 20s, people thought that talkies would do away with the films. And then they decided that, you know, television would do away with film as well. But it didn't.
Did you get a lot of grief then, say, in the 60s from the Catholic Church as you were trying to do groundbreaking things with television? Was it tough?
Nobody would pretend that it was easy, particularly as there was a culture of, you know, obeisance to the Catholic hierarchical ideas of what was right and wrong. I mean, there was a shocking, and to some extent, I suppose there still is, a shocking observance of authority and hierarchy among Irish people. Even though, I mean, we have a great tradition of bucking the system and of rebellion, and I hope that will never leave us. But yes, the Catholic Church is responsible for shocking injustices that were done to Irish people, poor people. There's a shocking snobbery still exists, I'm afraid, within certain elements of our society. And consequently, we do not have the equal society that, as a republic, we always aspire to. We're a capitalist democracy. We are not a republic yet, but let's hope. Maybe we're on the road.
We're not, because there's still too much inequality. Is it too much poverty? Yes. A healthcare system that isn't for all, not housing for all. Is that what you mean?
I'm afraid so. Yes, of course. But compared now to some other parts of the world, we are a decent bunch on the whole. We look out for one another. We try to kind of help one another on the ground. Sometimes I think politics gets in the way of human intercourse, you know, but that's life.
I don't want to come across patronising, but, you have 90 years experience now. What's your secret? Like, you're energetic, you're articulate, you're in super form and you're very positive. How do you do it?
I think I had great parents who loved one another and who loved us. And I think that really is the secret of all growth, all life. And I look out the window now and I see there's a gang of birds having a great old twitter at the bird table. And I think, Kiera, come on, let's keep going. Let's go for a swim. Neil, come on, go for a swim. Great idea.
I thought about it yesterday on Ballinskellig's beach, and then I changed my mind. I saw a couple of hardy women go in there and they said, oh, it's lovely and warm. And I said, you liar.
Well, no, it's not that warm, but come on. You get used to it very quickly. It really is. I was out on an Ishir yesterday. A friend of mine had a birthday. She's Nigerian, and her two daughters. And they were in direct provision here for 8 years before they managed to, you know, get free and become citizens, and now they're Irish citizens. And we all were there on the beach with everybody else. It was lovely. And the kids getting into the water, drowning themselves and drowning their parents and having a great old time. So it was really lovely day. Everybody has a capacity to be joyful. That's it. You know, everybody has it. Some people have a hard time. Some people have a very hard life.
You were born in Cork, were you? Did you stay long, or what?
No. My parents met in Cork. They were both Clare people. They met in Cork and they had their first four children in Cork, lived at the top of Audley, in top of Patrick's Hill in Audley Place.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely old place. And then my dad was transferred to, believe it or not, Lifford in County Donegal, where he should have been born. But since my mother had had her first four children in Cork, she decided she'd come back here to have me. So that was it. She came back to Cork. And I was born in Cork, and then she transferred.
Do you have any allegiance to Cork as such? I mean, would you get back?
Oh, of course. I have lovely cousins in Cork. My mother was the youngest of 12 in Clare, and she had two sisters who were married in Cork. So we have cousins, absolutely great characters, from Cork, in Cork, and I come down and back and forth. Mick Kennigan is a pal, you know, in the Cork Festival.
Yeah.
Film festival, yeah. So, you know, I'd be coming and going now and again.
You have an incredible outlook on life. You really and truly do. I think a parachute jump for you is just like a walk in the park, really. No bother.
let's wait and see.
You should get yourself a little GoPro and film it on the way down, you know, or pull out the mobile phone and video yourself on the way down.
Yeah. Yes, with a commentary. Will you stop? Listen, get off. Behave yourself.
All right,
and have a good old day yourself.
Yourself too. Listen. Take care.
Okay. Thanks a million. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Bye-bye.
What a wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed that. I hope you did too. Lelia Doolan, the age of 90, who would be jumping from a plane. It's a tandem parachute leap. Totally unfazed by the prospect, in fairness to her. And fundraising for Medicine Sans Frontier, which is Doctors Without Borders. She's nearly approaching 10 grand in donations so far. If you would like to give a couple of bob, idonate.ie. And then when you're in idonate.ie, search for Support Lelia's Big Birthday Jump for Charity to celebrate her 90th. And that's Lelia, L-E-L-I-A. Support Lelia's Big Birthday Jump for Charity. I mean, she is an incredibly powerful, optimistic, very positive woman that we should all be like her. And it's lovely chatting with her. Get you thinking, actually, as well. You know, have you ever done anything that takes you out of your comfort zone? I don't think this takes Lelia out of her comfort zone at all, having just had a conversation with her. And I'm glad we touched on other aspects of her life as well. I found that very, very interesting, very entertaining woman. So have you done anything that takes you out of your comfort zone? Text 0868104106. Thank you.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Pick up the phone, 0818104106. This is Gas. Have you done anything that takes you out of your comfort zone? I was talking to Lelia, who's doing the tandem skydiving. Ted said, I've tried to get something done to make my street safer by asking Cork County councillors to help for 10 years and still nothing. My challenge is to step out my front door without getting knocked down or abused by speeding drivers daily. That's what takes me out of my comfort zone, walking out the front door. David says, I went quad biking in my transition year. Fellow pupils were amazed at how good I was after initially unfamiliar. On my first try, I'd never quad biked before or anything similar. My experience of playing driving video games paid off. I was just thinking of that yesterday, says David. Jason says, I bungee jumped into a residential swimming pool from a crane. I think my fingertips were inches from touching the bottom of what must have been a pool with about 2 meters of water. You see how they can measure those bungees right down to, as you say, almost like your fingertips. Brian O'Sullivan says, have I ever done anything to take me out of my comfort zone? Yes, I got married and my comfort was gone. David says, I did tandem skydive for the blind in the year 2009. I'm afraid of heights, but I can tell you, it was exhilarating. Now, for somebody to be afraid of heights to do a tandem skydive, that is out of your comfort zone. Eddie says, I toured East Africa alone. Ellie says, have I done anything to take me out of my comfort zone? Yes, I had a child. And Joe said, why would I leave my comfort zone when it's nice and comfortable in here? Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Brian Carney sent me a fabulous piece of audio over the weekend. We were talking a lot about, you know, crashes and deaths and roads and bad driving habits and mobile phones and all sorts of stuff like that. And in his own time, and apparently he does this in his own time, he's a super, super duper editor. And he put together some bits and pieces from little bits that I was talking about on air last week. We in the trade call it imaging. But he did a crack-up job. He really did. He says, "You have my full permission to play this audio clip. In my spare time, I like to relax with the cuppa and mix and edit audio together. This is from your chat on Friday to Dr. Jason Vanderveld. I can tell you one thing, Brian, if you ever think about a career change, you're made for audio editing, whether it's radio or television or Instagramming or podcasting." Anyway, this is what he sent to me.
Time to talk.
There's a campaign out at the moment saying, "Would it kill you to put your phone
down?" We're addicted. We as society are addicted. We cannot put our phones down.
And it's hard to fight against it. You know, people, we try.
I just appeal to people, just allow your commute to be your peaceful time. Allow your commute to just be focusing on the road, listening to a bit of radio, you know, and being that your time.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people who never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
Brian Carney. Conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Super work. You have my full permission to keep sending me audio grabs like that, my friend, because they are of the highest quality and they really do matter. That certainly did. And I'm amazed, actually, you do this kind of editing and work to relax with the cuppa by doing a bit of mixing and editing. It's a relaxing thing for you. That's fantastic, because you clearly have a talent. So keep them coming if you want. Happy to play them. And thank you for that one, Brian Carney. Text 0868 104 106. Just a couple of updates for you. Good news today. Darren, who was on the air with me on Friday, a functioning alcoholic, he starts his treatment program this morning in Coonvorra in Brewery, County Limerick. We'll be checking in with Coonvorra. It may not be today. If not today, we'll certainly check in with him tomorrow. But I want to wish Darren all the best of luck. He'll go into the residential centre. We set it up for him on Friday, and he'll be there for 3 months. And hopefully he'll come out in good shape and will have the learning skills and the wherewithal and the positivity to change his world. Meanwhile, I'm Kieran. Yes, that man is right. It's €8,000 for 4 weeks if you were to pay for it. Privately, I'm a recovering alcoholic and it's very tough, but I'm getting there day by day. Some people judge, and people should never judge. I'm a positive person now, even though life is tough every day. I wouldn't want anyone to walk in my shoes. Well, good luck to you, Kieran. Keep fighting the fight. Here we go again. What people really need is to get real. Go to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's free. Treatment would help, but all treatment long term leads to AA in the end. Treatment centres for discovery, AA for recovery. When alcohol costs more than the price of it, then he has a problem. I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, but AA works for everyone that really wants it to work. Morning, Neil. I went into Arbor House over 35 years ago. I'm an alcoholic, but I haven't touched alcohol since. This is Arbor House on the Douglas Road. Arbor House to me was priceless. But if you want to be able to manage, then you have to be honest. Most importantly, you have to want help. Darren perhaps isn't being 100% honest, and I worry that other addicts who are relying on his sharing of his story under the assumption that he was not drinking may have been badly let down by him. No, I mean, if you were listening to the conversation, he never said he wasn't drinking. He was. I feel that if he is serious and he should get a bank loan, pay the big money, wouldn't it be worth it to get his life back? Well, that's rather judgmental. I mean, he just doesn't have it, and we just wanted to share his story, and if I can help in any small way, I'm happy to do so. So I say, go for it, Darren. Well done on trying to help Darren. Wishing him all the best. Keep positive, Darren. You can do this. He may have helped a lot of people by coming on air, you know, so well done to all concerned. The 8,000 that Darren quoted is correct for private treatment. If you have a medical card, you still need to pay, but it's an agreed amount, and a much longer waiting list to get a place on a medical card. I've tried to get my brother a place for drug addiction, and one final one. It's an awful shame that this man with his alcohol problem has no access to help or someone he can talk to addressing his real problems. Well, he does now, and hopefully he'll make the most of it. Keep those texts coming. Text 0868 104 106. We're back after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Keep those conversations coming. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. Particularly, what have you done in your life that took you out of your comfort zone? Which means that you might have had a fear or been apprehensive, but did it all the same. Challenged yourself. They say that we should do something that frightens us every day. Not that puts you in any kind of physical peril or anything, but that you should challenge yourself every day. So what have you done? Text 0868104106. It's Monday, which means it's Monday Munchies. Today is an extraordinarily generous day from Luso in Ballincollig. For everyone who loves chocolate and cake, 15 different cakes. 15, because I counted them. I can't read them all up, but you will win the whole lot if you text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. Luso of Ballincollig. You can check out all of their delicious artisan handmade creations at lusocork.ie. So www.lusocork.ie. So here's a selection. It's a luxury mini bite box. I don't know why they call it mini. There's like 15 in there. So there's raspberry cheesecake, there's raspberry bakewell, there's chocolate marquise, there's the rocky road, sticky toffee with a salted caramel cream, there's a crunchy peanut butter slice, chocolate fudge, lemon drizzle, coconut macaroon, and that's just for starters. So if you want to win the lot for you and your workmates today, text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106, and we'll start the shout outs in about a half an hour's time.
Call Neil now, 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Busy morning, giving out glorious weather forecasts, and of course the story in the paper then says that Europe was never in worse shape when it comes to weather and extremes and all sorts of things like that. Texter says global warming is media driven and it's frightening young people. This is typical Irish weather, as in lucky bag weather, I suppose. On the Stardust tragedy, not everybody is being 100% kind, saying, I'm sorry for the people that died in the Stardust, but why is my taxpayers' money being used now to pay the families? Not alone. Another one saying something similar. Why does the state have to pay for redress for the Stardust victims? Isn't that what insurance is for? Isn't the owners the ones that are liable? Well, you're going back 43 years, and I'm quite sure that those that are involved now are, and the ownership and the companies involved in those, in that business, there was a number of different companies, they're all well gone. We have redress for other things that people were wronged about, and in the, you know, in the whole national psyche, for many, many years, we were led to believe, because of a tribunal years ago, that it was started deliberately. And it wasn't. And that needs to be put right. I'm just saying. You spoke on Friday about fire exits being locked or chained. It was a class thing back in the 1980s. Because they were working class, they were judged. And that was the reason the exits were locked. Now, you're entitled to that, and perhaps there's some truth in it. But having worked in clubs for long enough in my life, long, long time in clubs, I can tell you that I came across an awful lot of fire exits over the years. This would be from the, you know, back end of the 70s, right through the 80s, up into the mid-90s, where fire exits were, even after, well after Stardust, were still either blocked, or things put in front of them, like chairs or tables or things like that, or chained, or locked in other ways. And a lot of it had to do with, you're not saving lives, because you couldn't get through the fire exit if there was a problem. But just so there's people wouldn't be opening them to let people in or to, you know, let in. I don't know. You know, it's just, I guess the primary reason was to, you know, keep people out. On other texts on different topics, I agree with you with regards to the protest outside Roderick O'Gorman's home. That was wrong. It's a family home. But I don't understand why you describe it as an attack on his home. Well, I don't actually. Thank you for picking up on that. I was actually doing a newspaper review, and it wasn't me that regarded it or called it or described it as an attack on it, on his home. It's the front page of this morning's Daily Mail. Neil, I wish the guys hadn't worn balaclavas. They should have stood by their convictions, stood their ground. What these protests show is that people are just so exasperated. Yes, they are exasperated. But don't you think that a family home, and I don't know who was in the family home, but if you take it to a politician's family home, or anybody working, whether it's the public sector or the private sector, their family home, where you'd have family and children in there, very intimidating and very scary. I believe that's a step too far. On a lighter note, you spoke about the potential for a Spice Girls reunion. Surely that should be a Spice Grands reunion, smiley face, says Tony. And somebody else then, Paddy, says, we're talking about one of the pledges of the government that anybody before their 14th birthday in Ireland at some stage in the future won't be allowed to possess a smartphone. The ban on under 13s using smartphones is BS. A Garda can't ask someone they believe to be under 18 for identification as it is. So how can they stop a 13-year-old for ID, says Paddy. I don't have any update to that story where a bus driver asked a young girl to show him her Instagram social media account so that he could check on her age. We did get on to Bus Éireann and Capwell, but as of yet, no response to that because that clearly is not acceptable. In other news then, from our stories regarding our tragedies on our roads, there's nothing wrong with the rules of the road that are currently in place, including nothing wrong with our speed limits. The issue is plain and simple. Selfish driver behaviour. There are drivers who believe that the road is just there for them and them alone with no consideration or moral obligation to other road users. If we're all to comply with these important rules, then it would reduce accidents. Reducing speed limits will have some impact, but remember, this will not have any impact on the drivers that continuously break the speed limits anyway. I've yet to see the RSA run ad campaigns for the bad behaviour of cyclists, electric scooters, pedestrians. The onus is always on the car driver. Thank you, Tony. One thing I noticed, they saw it again. I'm always reminded of it driving at the weekends. The slow drivers, the ones that really will cause accidents just like speeding drivers will. The slow drivers on country roads that are just tooting along at 40 in an 80, 50 sometimes, but usually between 40 and 50. And they are causing huge big backups behind them. I don't know whether there would be, as we termed years ago, Sunday drivers, there could be tourists, there could be nervous drivers, I don't know. But time after time, because of them, you see people taking risks, overtaking them. And I'm sure that statistically in the past there have been deaths from people overtaking slow drivers. What do you think? Text 0868104106. Back to a story on Friday. In the last hour of Friday's programme, Jill had a 22-year-old German student staying with her for the last month or so. He was on and off different buses. He was doing a bit of work for the Edge out in the Kinsale Road roundabout, and he lost his wallet with his ID on a bus. We got a call in then from the wife of a bus driver who thought maybe the wallet that he had found on his bus could well have been the bus belonged to, I haven't got the lad's name, a German name. My apologies for that. Jill will remind me of who he is. Jill, good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Leon, isn't it?
Leon,
yeah. German lad, right? Okay, yeah. So what happened? We were off the air. What happened after next? What happened next?
He went to Parnell Place. They were closed between 2:30, and then he went. They gave him another phone number to ring. He rang and rang and rang. I kept ringing it. Nobody was answering. Anyway, they went down there, and there was the wallet. In Capwell.
And was it Miriam's husband's bus driver?
I think so.
The 202.
So
Miriam's husband found a wallet. That was the one then. Fabulous.
It must have been.
Yeah.
Now he'd 40 euros cash in it. That was gone, but that didn't matter. His ID was there and he was able to go home on yesterday morning.
Well, that's sad about the cash.
Good.
I don't know what happened there.
Know,
maybe somebody on the bus. Who knows? It's a shame. But that's
I know.
But his ID.
Was he able to
fly?
He was. Yeah. Yeah, he left my house at 3:40 Sunday morning up to Cork Airport and texted me and all was good. So he was delighted.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So just a quick shout out to Miriam and to her husband who found the wallet.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Delighted.
Thanks, Neil.
Well done. Thanks for that. Great to be able to help
in that
regard. It always strikes me as bizarre when we get results on things like this is because the amount of people that are listening and get in touch and want to help. I had to turn around yesterday and go to the airport road. The driver coming towards me on the was on the phone and over the white line. Carr's Hill's a joke. Cargill Line's a joke. We have McGrath and Coveney. People should remember this at election time. Why is it the fault of politicians, the way people drive, incidentally? What have they done for Cargill Line and that road? actually, that texter goes on to talk about a youth centre that costs millions that I never see anybody going into. Where's that? A youth centre that costs millions in Cargill Line, nobody's using it? Really? Anyway, yesterday I was waiting in the queue at the traffic lights at Wilton. I was 10 cars back. The lights went green, traffic moved off, all except for the man in front of me. He was driving a white Porsche. I waited and I waited and I eventually beeped. He took a moment, then took off fast and ended up breaking the lights, which had just turned red by the time he reached them. Moments later, heading east, a woman shot over two lanes of traffic with no indication whatsoever. She ended up in front of me. I indicated into the overtaking lane, glanced across as I passed, and there she was, woman in her 40s, texting and giving just the odd glance up to the road. I took her reg. I have reported her. Stupid, stupid people. I wonder whether that will make any difference if you don't have any dash cam footage to back up the report to An Gardaí. What can they do? Your man, though, that was just sitting and didn't take off, he was clearly looking down at his phone, texting or scrolling. The traffic moves on. Mortified, I suppose, that he had to be beeped at because he just literally wasn't paying attention. My dad and brother are both truck drivers. Daily they face drivers on the road who have no patience, not paying attention to the road. Every time we hear of an accident, we live with the fear that they have may have gotten into the accident. I feel like the standard of driving the past year has massively dropped. Well, you know, the truck drivers see it all because they're up higher and they can see down. Please don't give up my details. The guards should park by the hairdressers and they see the speed that people are driving around the lock. I have seen dogs being hit on numerous occasions and it's only a matter of time before a person or a child is hit or killed. That's out near the lock. I was parked in the Belgooly lay-by when I saw a woman walking and speaking on the phone. Then she got in the car, drove off, still talking with the phone up to her ear. And just two or three more, I travel to Ringaskiddy daily and the amount of articulated trucks coming and going from the Port of Cork must be in their thousands. Cars Hill is not designed for that kind of traffic, yet the Port of Cork was still moved there with no road infrastructure to back it up. The authorities have a lot to answer when it comes to traffic issues and crashes. And then Pat says, as you know, I spend a lot of time in Spain. Problems like this are worldwide. Even if you go for a coffee or dinner, there are people on their phones. My God, phones are a curse. Just look at what they've done to society. Kids are being bullied on them in school. Driving causing death because of them. People on them in the cinema, in restaurants. People now have a new addiction, Neil. It is to their phone. Text 0868-104-106. Pick up the phone on 0818-104-106. We're back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Yeah, Drumcolliher wouldn't be too far from Newmarket, Donerail, Charleville, areas like that as you're heading up towards the Limerick border. I was talking, of course, earlier in the back end of the week ago about the Stardust fire in 1981, where 48 teenagers lost their lives and hundreds were injured. There was well over 750 of them inside in the nightclub, which was not uncommon, actually, back then. I remember for a number of years, I worked in a club in County Limerick in Newcastle West called Xanadu. On a Sunday night, you could have 1,000 people inside in it. It was an enormous nightclub. It did live gigs and bands. Moving Hearts used to play, Bagatelle, a lot of the big gigs. I was the DJ there. Friday night was busy. Saturday night was busy. Sunday night was the big night in the country and many, many people would come out, over 1,000 people. Clearly never an issue with any security there, I can tell you. Neither the door staff were a problem, nor were any of the fire exits ever chained. Like, that was a fine club, massive club, 1,000 people in it. So it's not uncommon to have those kind of numbers in clubs back in the day. Everything changed then, of course, and you know, there are less and less nightclubs around now. But I was talking about the Stardust disaster where 48 children never came home. And then I was contacted by Mary Crowley, who had another figure of similar amounts, 48 lives that were lost. I mention Drumcolliher because that's where it happened. There is a mass grave in the grounds of Drumcolliher Church now, where 46 of the 48 victims were laid to rest. It was a disastrous cinema fire back in 1926, so we'll soon be coming up to the 100th anniversary of that. But anyway, enough of me. Mary Crowley joins me by phone. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
And thank you so much for coming on and telling us this awfully sad, traumatic event that impacted on the community nearly 100 years ago. What do you know of the event?
Well, I have no connection with it per se, and I didn't personally know anyone. But my father spoke about it when we were growing up. And the part that he was interested about, that a local man from Kentuck had cycled there and back, and thankfully wasn't caught up in the fire. And I was kind of surprised. Over the years, I didn't kind of hear a whole lot about it. And then last year, Nationwide had an article on it. And there was a prayer written by Charlie McCarthy, who was a descendant of one of the people that were burnt in the fire. It was shown on Nationwide.
Right.
Now, it was a fictional town and all this, but it was truth to effect. But I was kind of, when the Stardust thing kind of came up again, you know, I just said, that was the exact same amount, you know, 48 people that burned. Basically, the story, Neil, is there was no cinema in Drumcolliher. You probably often heard of the song, There's Only One Street in Drumcolliher. Fabulous song written by one of my favourite Percy French. His songs are always uplifting.
Right.
And seven people have sang it over the years that there's only one street in Drumcolliher. But people were interested, you know, the films were starting to come in the silent ones, I presume.
Yeah, yeah.
And some guy in Drumcolliher,
a fellow called William Babe Ford, decided to bring the cinema to Drumcolliher, and he teamed up with a chap called Patrick Downey, and they brought the yes. reels from Cork down to Drumcolliher and set up a cinema, was it? In a storehouse or something.
Yeah, upstairs over the back of a storehouse. And you remember downstairs in the storehouse, there were 5 gallon drums of petrol and a lot of stuff stored.
Oh, stop.
And now there are varying versions of it. I've kind of been looking up there lately as to why the reels wasn't brought down in the metric cases that they're usually encased in. One was that he borrowed them in inverted commas from his employer, who the cinema in Cork, and he didn't want them to be missed, so that the were standing there, but the reels weren't in them. And of course, they were highly flammable material. Apparently, now, as if I know anything about this, that they're made of nitrate, and even if you submerge them in water, that doesn't quench
the
them.
The film reel itself. But the film was shown upstairs, and there was, did I hear that there was only access up to the top by a ladder or something outside the building or something like that?
That was very common at the time, Neil. It was the back of the building and it was a timber ladder. There's actually a street in Kentuck, a lane in Kentuck, known as Stepladder Lane, because people lived in lofts up over from businesses where they went in the back lane there, and a movable stepladder, timber, and people, usually labourers and people working in big houses and things that couldn't afford their own accommodation, they lived in them, and it was called Stepladder Lane.
So go away, they lived similar. Up there. Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's noted, like, and I often think about it when they're talking now about rejuvenating the city centre and bringing people to live in there, and people are, you know, they're on about health and safety and fire, and people are saying, well, sure, you know, it happened long ago. It did happen long ago, but I'd rather have be more fire alert than not. What could have happened? And a lot of people burnt in fires that time. But anyway, the film, now, I always was told it was the Ten Commandments, and Vincent Brown, the journalist who's from Bradford himself, he wrote about it some years back. I think it was the Irish Times.
But that would have been, are you talking about the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston, is it?
What's his name? Cecil B. DeMille. DeMille's film.
Because I would have thought that would have been much later than 1926. But anyway, maybe there were different ones.
But this would have been probably the silent era.
Okay. And so they were showing a film of the Ten Commandments, and 150 climbed up the ladder and got in to see it, right?
Yes.
Okay. And they paid their ninepence to somebody who was standing at a table just inside the door up there, paid their ninepence. But were there candles on the table so he could see the coins or something? Was that what it was?
Yes. The projector was connected up to a truck outside, kind of a generator kind of a thing to operate it. And there was a table with two candles on it where people paid.
Yeah.
The only thing they had for the candle was the candle grease, took it to the table. There wasn't candle holders.
Right.
One of them quenched fairly quickly. And the idea of the candles was they wanted to see who was paying and making sure that they got the right money and all this. And somebody accidentally knocked over the second candle, and all the reels were there then. They weren't in their metal boxes. They took fire. Somebody apparently caught it and threw it out the one and only entrance exit, which was the steps, the timber steps. And underneath that, 8 feet down were ricks of hay. So the hay caught fire. Some people rushed to the exit to get out. There was a stampede, very like the Stardust. And people turned back and they knew there were a few windows at the back, small little windows, but there were iron bars in them. And apparently some ex-IRA man knew that those bars had been kind of removed a little bit so that they could make an emergency escape.
As in they tried to prise them open then?
Apparently it was easy enough to prise them open because they had been loosened by the IRA in an attempt to escape if the RSE raided or anything like that.
Okay, so but some people did manage to get out that way then?
Oh, yes. A lot of people. One woman, actually, I think there were more than one window. I think there might have been a few of them, small little windows barred up. But with the heat, the metal expanded as well and that made it more difficult. One woman apparently died dangling by her feet.
Oh my God.
From it.
Half in and half out of the window, yeah.
Exactly. And this guy that wrote the prayer said his father very, very rarely spoke about it. It was his grandaunt.
And were they of all ages, like, or were they young people?
Oh, they were. Half of them were under 25, and the youngest was 7, and the eldest was in their 60s. And their whole families, husband, wife, and a few children, they were
Could
families.
You even begin to imagine the panic inside in that building?
And you must remember as well, Neil, that it was apparently a very, very dry summer and water was very scarce. And there were two wells in the town and the river were practically dry, that they didn't have access to the fire services like we would have now.
No, 1926, but formation of the state, early days. More than half of the victims were under 25. 17 of them were under 18 years of age and the two youngest victims were 7.
And lots of the bodies weren't identified. No. They identified a few by a bit of jewellery or something. So how they counted the 48 was, they counted 48 skulls.
Oh, my God. And one entire household was lost. A husband, a wife, daughter, sister-in-law, maid, servant, all wiped out. All went off to see a picture on a Sunday afternoon.
That's correct. And the bodies were, of course, they were moving in. The army had to bring in coffins and all this. But this one article that I had to read in it there, it resonated so much to me, like the Stardust, how they knew the people that were missing, because there were a lot of them couldn't be identified. They never came home that night.
They never came home.
Like the Stardust.
There was a man called William Savage, apparently. He was the granduncle of a fellow called Pat Savage, who told the story about his granduncle, William Savage, who ran into the building. He was back in the area at the time and his sons told him there was a fire and he ran in, not knowing that the two lads, the young fellas, they were 11 and 12, had actually got out. He ran in to try and save them. They were safe as it happened, but poor old William Savage, who ran in to help, he never emerged from the blazing inferno, apparently. And I'm reading that from, I think, an article in the... Would it be right the Limerick Leader were reporting that? One of the men who went in?
It could be. It's just something similar. A lot of that happened in the Stardust. Brothers went back in to bring out their sisters and they never... They died as well, perished in the fire. But this man that wrote the fictional prayer, it was during lockdown and he's a playwright and it was his grandaunt. And he said there was this sense of shame because his father never spoke about it. And the sense of shame was that it was his aunt that got stuck in a window. Now there is.
You're saying because the aunt, by getting stuck in it, more people couldn't have been saved because she was stuck in it. That's an awful guilt to live with. I mean, she died, obviously.
Because she was rotund. You couldn't say the F word with 3 letters now.
Yeah.
But the poor woman, it was terrible. And one source of information said that they pulled her hand off trying to release
her. Oh my God, that's shocking.
But the similarity is as well, the inquiry came up with nothing. 3 of them were charged with manslaughter and the 3 of them there was jewellery and all that. One or two of them immigrated in. They were taken to jail. They were charged with manslaughter and there was no charge. And someone asked W.T. Cosgrove at the time, would there be an inquiry? And he said no need.
So nobody was held accountable at all in that regard?
Nobody was held accountable.
No successful criminal prosecution for deciding to do what they did up on the mezzanine floor with straw around a place in a storehouse and candles and everything, petrol downstairs and having 150 people watching a film. Yeah. Seems very unfair on the families of the dead.
Yeah, but I don't know, did the people in Drumconnor, were they just wanted rid of it? Do you know that there's this huge, I actually never wintered, it's very near us in Kentuck, like a communal grave, 30 feet long and 3 feet high and everything near the church in Drumconnor.
It's there and there's a big headstone to them or a big cross them or what is it?
Yeah, and the Celtic cross and all the names are on it. And the scene of the fire is now a library kind of memorial place to the people that died there.
I never
but
heard
the
that.
Prayer, I just said there was a kind of a sense of shame. But very few, other than my father now, who was a Kentuckman, that spoke about it occasionally. Now they're disputing the fact that the film, The Ten Commandments, couldn't have been shown because the only four copies of that were in Dublin. There wasn't even a copy in Cork. That it was a cowboy film and it was comedy or something now like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I don't even know whether there would have been talkies then in 26 or whether they would have been silent. It was kind of around the transition period. But my understanding of, I don't know, I can Google it if you want. It was 1956, Claire is telling me, when the Charlton Heston version of The Ten Commandments came out. So it's more likely to have been a cowboy. But listen to me, it's of no consequence what they want to watch, to be honest. It's the death and the loss of life, really. It's awfully sad. It's awfully sad.
And you know,
never heard that story. Never heard it.
Well, you know, Neil, it's funny now because I got involved a few years ago there with movie memories. They were looking for people, your memories of your movies, and there was a cinema in Kentuck at the time, there isn't now. And there were two people from the UCC, two professors. Neither of them had heard of it. And it isn't all that long ago. There are people still that were born in 1926. There wouldn't be a whole lot of them alive. But I was surprised that they had never heard of it. And I said, was I dreaming it?
No, people didn't talk about things then. Sure, they didn't. It was slow. They were slow to talk. We're more forthcoming. You know, there was a 1923. I mean, this doesn't take from the tragedy at all. Don't get me wrong. But just on this unanswered question, there was a version of the Ten Commandments in 1923. It was a 1923 silent film by Cecil B. DeMille. So you're right, it was the Ten Commandments.
But it was around that time, but was it shown there? I don't know.
Okay.
There are various versions. There was a white cowboy with one of the films and something else was whatever. But it wasn't unusual to have timber steps going up. When you think back, even like when we were growing up in the 50s,
there was no health and safety.
Yeah. Neil, exactly that. But it's nice to remember them now, while the Stardust people. And another one that I remember, do you know where we even had it? The Whiddy Island one, which was nearly 40 years.
Was 50, that 81, I think?
81.
Yeah.
And there were 50 people, and I don't think they ever, that there was any kind of an inquiry into that.
No, families are still fighting for justice and fighting for acknowledgement of exactly what happened. But Mary, thank you so much. I mean, you talk about life in Kanturk. You had a big ballroom there, wasn't it, for years? The Lilac, was it?
No, the Edel Quinn.
But where was the Lilac? Was the Lilac not in Kanturk?
Well, not my time anyway. The Lilac in a skiing.
Was it? Oh my God. Sorry for confusing the two.
No, we had the Edel Quinn called after Edel Quinn. And of course, we had smaller halls. We had the LH Hall in Kentuck, which I attended concerts and plays as a child. And that was accessed by a stairs going up into it. I don't know, was there any fire exits there? And then you had the Young Men's Society Hall, which was over in Upline Street. All these halls at the time, there were plays and concerts.
That's right. And people smoked as well.
The other thing, going back again to the thing in Drumcolour, you know how it wasn't bad enough now for the people in the Stardust, the relatives of them. They tried to portion blame them, saying that was somebody a cigarette and they were the cause of that guilt from them. And they said, The cause of the fire, first, could have been a cigarette. Secondly, it could have been that there were young fellas throwing their caps, trying to extinguish the flame of the candle with the cap. And apparently that was ruled out afterwards.
Yeah, I know.
It was all about putting blame on somebody else.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Thanks, Mary.
I mean, isn't it such a great day? Joe Duffy did a wonderful program on the Stardust today, that the result of the inquest was released. And he referenced briefly Jim Culliher, so that kind of...
Well, I'm glad that he did, and I'm glad that I had an opportunity to acknowledge that awful event all those years ago. Many people listening to this programme perhaps never knew that 48 people perished in a fire in Jim Culliher in 1926. 48 men, women and children. Thank you so much, Mary. You really did recall that story for us very accurately, and I do appreciate it. We can talk more on different tragedies that were impactful, of course, on people's lives. But we were talking about 1926, which was a long, long time ago. And indeed, I was recently watching a very interesting documentary, not of anything to do with Drumcullagher or up around that area of North Cork, but in East Cork. And it's to do with the Horgan brothers. And they were the people that first introduced cinema. They were huge into photography at the time, big Horgan family that was... a number of them there. I think they might have been shoemakers and bootmakers originally, and then struck off into photography and cinematography and things like that, and then the start of cinema in East Cork. But sorry, my apologies, Eilish, I've kept you waiting way too long. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I'm good.
Beautiful morning.
Absolutely.
Well, Mary's story is fascinating. I never heard it.
Nor did I. And I'm glad she got in touch, because we need to know about these things that happen, these disasters.
I mean, I've been through Drumcullagher, where I live in Carrier, near Abbeyfield, all there. So close, never heard of it. Fascinating. But anyway.
What do you recall? Are you old enough to recall the Stardust?
I am, Neil. I am indeed. I was 16, okay, at the time. And there was a lot of us in the family. But I remember it vividly happening. But 4 nights later, the 18th of February, same year, my uncle, he had retired from the British Navy, you know. He lived in London all his life. So he was my dad's brother. So there would have been maybe, because there were so many of us, they were probably mid-50s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, Paddy retired home to, he was literally about, we were in the middle of nowhere in Brosnan and Kerry, you know. And he was living about a half a mile over the road in this big old house that he owned. And he was married. Well, he was married. His wife had passed, so he was on his own. And that night, anyway, a neighbour, like I said, she has no phones or anything like that. A neighbour who would be kind of back to back with him in the country, you know, came flying over to my dad. And I had older brothers, maybe they were in the early 20s. And they all flew over. And God love us, my mother was in bed saying the rosary. And there was me and my sisters all kneeling down around the bed praying.
And did you all do that every night, yeah?
Oh, yeah, we did. The rosary was said every night at 6 o'clock in our house. Yeah. Uh-huh. In the kitchen.
Mm.
Everything was stopped. Yeah. And we all knelt down, whatever gang was like. The older ones were doing their thing. But anyway, Dad and the boys rushed over, Eamon and David, and the house was an inferno at this stage. I remember vividly, I didn't see the house. One sister did. But she was completely traumatised afterwards, but she's fine now. She was the only one of us that actually saw it.
Did your dad rush when the neighbour came that there was a fire in the
house? Oh, my dad into the car and off they went. She was only 2 minutes off the road, and the boys on tow with him. And you see, my dad knew the paddy, like as I say, he was living alone, and it was February and it was cold. And he had an old two bar, what you call them, the old electric fucking.
That's right, a two bar electric fire. I remember
so
them well.
Dangerous, remember? And he had an old duvet over him, and apparently that got fire. But Dad, the house was so badly engulfed in flame, right? Eamon and David, like they would have been maybe 22, they just wanted to keep the door in, but it was going to blow any minute. The house, Paddy was dead. He would have been dead from smoke inhalation anyway at that stage, you know. And that was it. My mum and us at home praying like mad. And it was horrific. I remember it so well. I can picture my mum's bedroom and the...
And I know that your dad was worried about the lads wanting to kick in the door, because I think there was a full calor gas bottle inside the front door.
A full calor gas bottle. Yeah, because my dad would be over to him, back to him all the time. You know, he was newly retired.
Oh my God!
And of course, the fire brigade then. So God loves, they were coming from Abbeyfield in those days. You know, Satnavs and all that. So we were in the middle of absolutely nowhere, and they had to go refill then at the river because they ran out of water. And it was just, you know. But,
and what what absolutely tragic, and in around 3 or 4 days after the Stardust tragedy, what do you think of the 3 or 4 texts this morning? People were saying, awfully tragic, 48 people died. But why should there be a redress scheme where taxpayers have to pay the family's money?
That was part of my text to Seamus.
Oh, okay.
Unless somebody hasn't experienced or witnessed the horrific what happens to somebody when they die in a house fire or whatever kind of fire, they have no idea, and they shouldn't begrudge anyone redress to these families and victims. I mean, Neil, I was watching Prime Time. You didn't happen to see it from last week?
No.
Where this, oh my goodness, I had shivers all up and down, I swear to God. This lovely man, I can't remember his name, was he Sean? But anyway, he would be just 60, like myself, in July. And God almighty, he got out, okay? And in the midst of it all, he had seen two girls clinging to each other in trouble, right? I get the shivers again, but anyway. It would be worth it if you could get it on playback, whatever. Prime Time, was it Monday or Tuesday night last? Can't remember. But it was just fine clinging. But this lad, anyway, he went back in to get the girls, okay? And his fingers, right, he fell. He got the girls out. He was safe, came back in, got the girls out. He fell, okay? He was trampled. Blackness, smoke, everything.
Yeah.
So he started to crawl, but he thought he was going to the foyer out the front, but he was actually landed on the dance floor, okay?
Oh, he'd be totally disoriented.
He knew he was going the wrong way, but through the God's intervention or whatever, he managed to get some exit that wasn't locked, and he got out. But his fingers, you could even hear in his voice that he obviously had some chest repercussions from it.
Mm.
But his fingers were like twisted. Do you know, say his knuckles are back and forwards, and it's well worth catching it on the player, Neil.
It's very disturbing and very upsetting, you know, when you hear when you hear people's life stories or their experience in something like that. Like, there was carpet tiles on the wall, and there was dripping molten.
Exactly,
there was dripping molten. Slabs of tiling that were dripping down as well from the ceiling.
Yes.
They were all highly toxic.
2,000 carpet tiles is what was on the walls.
Yeah.
And like, whomever sent that text to me about redress,
there's a few of them though. What would you say to them?
They are. What age are you, do they remember it? Because,
we do remember it. You remember it, so do I. I was on air reading news at the time. I'll never forget the morning of it, 1981. Mm-hmm. Some might say this is not something that the state should have to pay for. It would be those that owned the nightclub should be paying. And I remember the family and the company behind it some years later got over $500,000 pounds in compensation from Dublin County Council.
Yeah, I heard that. But look, Neil, it's like an endless piece of money at the moment. They're paying for, you know, and I love animals, $1 million a month for dogs and cats. I mean, I sell dogs, it doesn't cost me $1 million a month.
I know. And taxi,
you know,
I'd like to get the taxi fare bill now as well, because that's another one that's doing the rounds. It's off.
Yeah.
The amount of money.
It's like if you didn't, at 16, between me and my family, maybe there's 10 years, 12 years, I lost the brother, sister, whatever. Say there's about 10, 12 years between the youngest, I have a younger brother, the youngest and the eldest, like, you know. And we were all of the nightclub kind of, I was only beginning at 16, going to the local dance.
It was a different time, you know. There would have been hundreds and hundreds. I mentioned a club in Newcastle West, a place to be 1,000 people there.
Yeah,
and
I
of course,
there was, I was there.
Oh, well, it was a super club. It really was. It was groundbreaking with the technology at the time in 1985
or
86.
The lights and everything.
The super light system. It was video disco as well. It was incredible.
Yeah,
but everybody in there was smoking. I mean, think about that.
Same as myself years ago. And like, there was a place in, what was his name? In Newmarket, same thing. Turned the Hilltop was, I can't remember. It's just still there.
The Highland?
The Highland, I knew it was H, yeah. I was often there as well, same crack.
And they wouldn't have all been using ashtrays, like, so it was like, it was risky business, I can tell you. It really and truly was.
And I remember there was a place in Abbeyfield, Flamingos was the name of it, right? And it was an old dance hall. And I swear to God, Neil, for queuing up inside, now, not mind outside, but it kind of continued, you know, they were like kettle bars. You know, those steel, silver bars.
Yeah.
And we were all there like cattle.
All right, Elise.
Yeah, sure, we were wild for road, like. But I just loved Mary's story.
I know
a guy here whose mom was from Drumcolour, and I was asked that now. His mom.
They didn't talk about it for years and years, apparently, Drumcolour, way back in the day. But don't worry. I mean, is it make an interesting point about sitting around in the 80s? People might think it was extraordinary that people would have been sitting around at 6 o'clock of an evening saying the rosary, but it was very commonplace. I mean, even 5 or 6 years later than that, I would have been living with my grandfather in Blackpool in Madden's buildings. And the last thing at night, whether I liked it or not, here I didn't mind if he wanted to do it.
Yeah,
we'd sit down, we'd kneel down at the back of chairs and he'd say a decade of the rosary. It was the last thing at night.
Then
he'd wind the big clock on the stair, on the wall, and we'd head up the stairs to bed.
Great times, dude. And like, one last point. To this day, my sister, she lives in Abbeyfield. She's the girl now that saw Paddy's charred body. But she's very, she has a great face, but she's a fabulous person. She works for the church, like, blah, blah, blah. But if I'm visiting them and her husband, Morris, and they have three lovely children, and the 6 o'clock bells come on the Angelus, everyone thinks stop, and we say the Angelus to this day.
What's wrong with it?
Exactly.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alish. Text 0868104106. Back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, some very interesting stories this morning. In lighter news, though, it is also Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and Luso Ballincollig. Luso Cork is the website, www.lusocork.ie. You can check out all their deliciousness, all of the artisan treats, all the handmade, beautiful chocolates and biscuits and cakes. Now, we have a thing called a mini bite box. It's far from mini. It's got 15 different beautiful creations. Let's do some shout outs because somebody's going to win it in an hour's time, and we will deliver all of the beautiful Luso cakes and chocolate this lunchtime by Red Patroller. I'd like to nominate my workplace, St. Boys National School in Mallow, for the Monday Munchies. A bad United game yesterday. I'm sunburned, and to top it all off, the car wouldn't start this morning, but at least the sun is shining, says Mark. There you are, the eternal optimist. Try and see the positive. United were very lucky. yesterday in penalties. Crazy Monkey Skate and E-Scooter Repair Shop in Church Road in Douglas, please. Everybody at Audi Band on the Bandon Road. Morning to Shane. To everybody at Boston Scientific working hard. Thanks for getting in touch, Kevin. The HSE Unit 5 at the Southring Business Park. Morning to Roisin. Pro Steel Sheds. We'd love to win the cakes and biscuits and chocolates. Shall share with my co-workers, says Jake and Dunamore. I know you would. Nurtured Childcare in Blackrock. Terry and all the staff in the pathology department at the CIV Sivu, as in the South Infirmary Victoria. EMH Technical Services would love the munchies today for the hard-working electricians on site in Ballincollig. Oh, there's a lot of them today. Everybody at the Lady of Good Counsel, special needs in Ballincollig, doing amazing work. Step YMCA would love the munchies today. So would everybody at MLC. Scaffolding working in the Glen for Mernan and O'Shea. Apprentice Matty here working on a site in Pearshig's GAA working with Tony F. Carpentry. We're hanging for a Monday sugar boost and we'd love a shout out for the best carpenters this side of the River Lee. What's it like being an apprentice carpenter, Matty? How's it going for you? Brendan Tynan at Ballylay Riding School in Waterfall has been in touch. Everybody at Homefront in Blackpool. Cap at Ardevon even. Good morning to all there. And one or two more, Simotech in Carrigaline. And finally, Morrison's Island College campus. We're getting ready for the exams that are starting next week. So good morning to Rebecca. So keep those texts coming. We'll do another batch of Monday Munchies shout outs in about a half an hour's time. And we'll pick a winner for our Luso Cork treats at around about a quarter to midday. So text who you are and where you are to 086-8104-106. You know, we need to start doing now as well. We need to start doing WhatsApp audio messages for our Monday Munchies and for Free Food Friday as well. Where instead of typing it, you send us a voice note. But for now anyway, text who you are and where you are to 086-8104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red. Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And a quick reminder again, very briefly, Luso Cork are on board with the Monday Munchies again this week. So text who you are and where you are to 086 8104 106. Delicious treats from them. From this 15, a count of 15 of them, raspberry cheesecakes, triple chocolate brownies, caramel creams, Viennese swirls, coffee bean squares, lemon drizzle, all sorts of beautiful macaroons and raspberry bakewells. So text who you are and where you are to 086 8104 106 6, and we will do another bunch of shout outs in about half an hour's time. You were talking about getting out of your comfort zone. I was, with regards to Lilia, who's jumping out of an airplane with a parachute, and she's 90 years young. Talking about going out of your comfort zone, not me, Neil, but my brother-in-law. I saw him yesterday with a tea towel in his hand. A tea towel. First time in 15 years that I've seen him doing something like that. I suppose it's never too late to learn. Do a bit of cleaning or dry a couple of dishes. It's not always about the dishwasher. I got on a flight after 19 years of fear of flying, and I'm so happy now. All thanks to your show, Neil. You sent me to the hypnotist, Brian Evans. I'd sent other people to the hypnotist, Brian Evans, and this texter heard about him, went to him, and he cured her fear of flying. Delighted. Neil, Laura here. About 10 years ago, I did an abseil from halfway down Cove Cathedral. The hardest part was getting over the edge. It was horrendous, but it was my one in a million, never going to do anything remotely like that again moment. Well done. You did it. I'm afraid of heights. A long time ago, I said, I'm going to face my fear. I was in Mexico, in Cancun, Mexico, on holidays. We went to see one of the wonders of the world, the Chichen Itza. It's like a pyramid, and it looks really high. I went up to the top of it, walking up, never looking down, until I turned around. My legs froze. I nearly passed out when I saw how high it was and how much I'd climbed. I had to be escorted down by the tour guide. I don't think you can actually walk up it anymore. Meanwhile, I was in Vegas a few years back with my wife, and we went up the replica Eiffel Tower. When I got to the top, it was the same scenario. Again, I had to be escorted down. Face your fears, people. It didn't work for me. No, it didn't. I don't know what you ever think of climbing up to the top of Skellig. I think if you made it up to the top of Skellig, I think you would have to be escorted down. Somebody holding your hands or your shoulders on somebody's back, being escorted down from Skellig. I often wonder, though, because it's something that I never really was interested. I have no interest in going to Vegas. But then again, everybody's telling me, you're wrong, you should go. There's an awful lot more than just casinos and bright lights and noise and whatever. And there are many other things to do. I remain to be convinced. I suppose you don't know unless you go. I think maybe I might have more interest in maybe, you know, the desert area surrounding Vegas. But for people that go, they seem to love it. It's like, I've never had any interest in going to Dubai. I always think it's kind of like fake and way too man-made and, you know, big buildings, and it lacks culture, lacks heritage and history. But what do I know? A lot of other texts and different topics of conversation as well. Then good luck to Darren, who goes into rehab this morning in Brewery. A very honest appraisal of his challenge on air. He's been very real with his struggles. This is from Friday's conversation with Darren. Neil, there's a place in heaven for you if you mention or remind drivers out there that there's a white line on the road for a reason. And if there's an obstruction on your side of the road, it's you that must pull in and give way. That's what the white line means. So there's that and lots more besides. We'll pick it up after the break. Text 0868104106. My apologies, Carol. Just give me 2 minutes.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Interesting, the issue regarding the protests outside Roderick O'Gorman, the minister's house. There were protesting outside his house about all of the kids going missing in state care. Yes, that was also one of the reasons they were there. Immigration was another one, but they were also on about that. Those children gone missing in state care. And yet not one media company is covering it. Why is that? Well, I assume you haven't picked up the front of this morning's Examiner. It's the main front page on the Examiner this morning. Children in state care who went missing was on the cover of the Examiner this morning. And we're talking about dozens of them in the care of Tulsa at the same time. It's a headline story in the Examiner. So media are covering it. I agree it's a bit much to take a protest outside anyone's private residence. But if you look at all of the mistruths that politicians are telling, it's not acceptable either. A politician would almost argue the fact that today is Monday if it was in their interest. I suppose you're saying that today isn't Monday, it was in their interest. I get it, but I understand why people are so angry and why sometimes they visit politicians' homes. Rodrigo, another one, Rodrigo Gorman's problems are his own making with the tweet he sent around the world inviting every Tom, Dick and Harry to rock up to this country. Actually, the texter says Tom, Dick, Harry, Abdullah, Muhammad, which is rather unkind. I have no sympathy for him, and I'm not right-wing. Well, you should just think about it. Somebody's home, their private residence, where they go when they're not on duty, where they go when they're not working, where they may have a wife or a partner or children. How would you like it if you had a bunch of people disagreeing with something that you did, parked outside your front door, or flying flags or attaching something to your front gate or whatever and just hanging around? You wouldn't like it, would you? I mean, it's your home. Anyway, keep those texts coming. Text 0868104106. So anyone who hasn't experienced the death of someone to fire should not begrudge redress to the survivors and the families of the Stardust tragedy. On the Stardust, yes, I remember. I meant no disrespect. This is a text who texted earlier about the taxpayer picking up the cost. I just wonder why the owners and the insurance companies get away scot-free. Because it was 43 years ago and those companies behind the Stardust are gone now. I know that one of the newspapers tried to get in touch with one of the members of the Butterley family who owned the Stardust at the time, way over remotely in the west of Ireland somewhere, where they doorstepped somebody at a home where he's supposedly staying, and he wasn't there. Just a slight correction, Neil, to this morning. Thank you for correcting me. It's important to do so. The Whitty disaster was January the 8th, 1979. Thank you for that. I'll come back to more texts, I promise, between now and midday. But Carol is standing by. Carol, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Thank you for your patience. I appreciate it. You have the floor. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
You're grand. Just text there earlier about speeding in country areas, country roads. I said I just can't understand why they are investing so much in putting in cameras in at traffic lights in the city or in city suburbs.
Well, there will be. This is a nationwide campaign of rolling out cameras at traffic lights, and it will start in Dublin. So they'll have two cameras. One is for vehicle registration plate identification, and the second will capture an image of the driver.
That's correct. But what about the country roads? Are they going to put extra monitoring on those roads, or what's going to happen? Because I had a very close hit and run there last Tuesday. I'm still fairly shaken from it.
Well, try and share what happened, if you can.
Yeah. I was travelling near Craighill in West Cork, within a 60-kilometre. A little small grey car came towards me. It must be doing at least 100 kilometres an hour. He was making for me, so I made for the ditch.
So he's on the wrong side of the road, or it's a country road, so he was in the middle of it, is it?
It's a country road. He was definitely not on his own side, but not alone that, but he was literally airborne.
What time?
At 10 o'clock in the morning.
In the morning? Okay, what happened next?
Yeah.
You headed for the ditch to get out of his way. What happened next?
Yeah, he... my mirror went in pieces. I thought the whole side of my car was gone. I thought my window was gone in. I was literally just shaken.
Oh, my God.
He continued on, kept going. Unfortunately, there was nobody after me, or fortunately, because he probably would have done the same to them. But there wasn't any car after me for about 5 minutes. And then there was quite a bit of traffic came along, lorries, vans, cars, they all stopped. They were all so helpful.
Were you very upset?
I didn't know where I was. I couldn't even explain. So I just came along and told me to ring the guards in Bantry, which I did, and which were very helpful. I just couldn't explain where I was. It took me a while to come around.
That's shock, you know that. That's shock. Serious.
Yeah, the guard, when the guard came out, and as I say, he couldn't be more helpful. He understood what it was, you know, what I was like. He took the details and he said he will try his best. He went to a shop nearby and a pub nearby to see if he could get anything on CCTV, but unfortunately they don't cover the road. So
did you get a look at your man? Was it a man? Did you get a look at the...
Not a hope. It was just like a jet.
Unbelievable.
He just blew. You couldn't even get the number of the car.
It was upon you and gone past you before you knew it. If it had been a couple of other... If it was a couple of inches to the right, it would have taken out your front right of the car, or maybe even more, like 6 inches, yeah. Game over.
Yeah. And I mean, it was 60K.
And he's doing... Yeah.
I could guarantee he was doing 100, but definitely he was doing over that.
I know what you're saying about why in cities and why at traffic lights and what have you. I suppose the reason that at traffic lights ultimately is to catch people who are racing through red lights, people who are, you know, driving into boxes and blocking traffic. They'll also catch people who are on their phones at red lights. There's a good chance that your man that you had the experience with will also break red lights or go through amber lights or will be on his phone or her phone. And they think that if you can stamp it out at traffic lights where you'll be like shooting fish in a barrel, it's a good start. Do you follow me?
It is. It is in a sense. But then I will say in country roads, there's so many diversions that people can take to avoid all of these things. I have never seen a speed camera and I'm on the road constantly. I've never seen anyone out monitoring speed.
I got a critical text then this morning from somebody who was going through Killarney at the weekend. It was a big game in Killarney, was there, at Fitzgerald Stadium, and reported seeing dozens of Gardaí on traffic duty, controlling things going in and out of the stadium. Obviously, the roads around it were absolutely chock-a-block with cars and people abandoning them and parking everywhere. Dozens of Gardaí available then for a GA match, they're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I understand, yeah.
Is it the proper use of resources for working Gardaí to be on traffic duty?
Yes, exactly, yes. I just don't know, but I think, like, I can't actually blame the Gardaí either because they are only doing what they are directed to do. So, like...
Sure, I know that. That's what their duty is. Do what you're told, where you're told, and do what you're told. Yeah, I'm just saying it's a reasonable thing to say. That could it be civilians that are doing that kind of work, you know?
Yes.
I think the Gardaí would prefer also if they were able to do more serious work than traffic duty at Fitzgerald Stadium of a whatever.
Definitely, because I know for a fact, like speaking to the Gardaí, you know, that what can you do, you know? And like, he did his very best in trying to follow or trying to get somebody that was after doing so much damage and, you know...
He nearly killed you, Carol. He nearly killed you.
Oh,
simple
my God,
as that.
Yeah.
And country roads... Yeah, I know. And country roads are an absolute lottery.
I'm driving a long, long time, but I will tell you, in the last 12 months, maybe a little bit more, it is absolutely a death trap. I mean, I have heard young people even saying... They're giving up their cars. They're afraid to drive, even in the roads down this way in West.
You come around a corner on a country road. Happened to me again yesterday afternoon. You have a fool in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
On a corner.
Yeah. And then can you imagine somebody doing 100 or over around a corner?
But I suppose to some extent, the poor old ministers that we have making all of the decisions, they don't even drive their own cars anymore. They have mercs and ministerial drivers to do it. So they're not even experiencing the craziness on the roads on a daily basis.
And you wonder sometimes, like, are they communicating even with the commissioner? Are they working together? I mean, this is what they need to do.
Well, I'm lucky that I'm not reporting your death after the weekend. It could have been 6 inches would have made a big difference and you'd be at least in hospital, possibly.
Myself, Yeah, I'm even delighted to see the sun shining out there. It's so great to be alive today, to be able to experience it.
Well, stay safe, Carol. Thanks for taking the call. Actually, we had National Slowdown Day. I touched on this at the start of the programme this morning. We had a motorist in Castlemartre that was caught by the Gardaí doing 194 kilometres an hour in a 100 kilometre zone on National Slowdown Day. 194 in a 100 kilometer zone. It's worth repeating. That is serious speeding. In the first 5 hours, the GATSO vans checked the speeds of 41,500 vehicles and they caught hundreds of them. Now, there's others besides your man, the lunatic in Castlemartre. 109 in an 80 in Mayo, 81 in a 60 in Carrigonshire, 108 in an 80 in Trim County Meath. There are loads of them here. 127 in a 100 in Donegal. They love their speed in Donegal. 132 in a 100 also up in Donegal, and that's just a selection of them. But no one comes near the Castlemartre motorist who was caught and clocked doing 194 in a 100 kilometre zone. Right, I'll just take call this side of the break if you don't mind. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
Good, my man. What's on your mind? What can you add to the story for us?
Well, for a start off, no, just you just read out there, no, like, I'm just stupid. National Slowdown Day.
Fella, right? I forgot the fella doing 112 kilometres in a 50 kilometre zone in Charleville.
No, well, I know my name.
112 in a 50. 112 in a 50 is 112 going through the village.
Why do we know about that? Because it's National Slowdown Day and there's a concentration of Gardaí on the roads. That's the only reason we know about it. This behaviour is there every single day. It's not just one day.
I'm not doubting it. Not for a moment. And are the GATSO vans or the Go Safe vans?
Oh, on the road on that day. Right? They're not caught the other days. It's going on every day. It was going on last Thursday when I was going out to Bandon Road and just up by the chum off of the chip when by it, when I was going 100 kilometres an hour, I was being passed like as if I was stopped still by cars. This is going on every single day. There needs a radical change in what's going on. Also, what needs to be done is a stupid statement that you hear so often, that these speed vans are only a money-making exercise. That is so ridiculous, so stupid. People have been penalised for their own bad behaviour, but they want to blame the speed van. You had a guy on with you the other day, or last week or so, and he was wondering what a speed van was doing up on the Bandon Road in the early hours of the morning. Why should it be there? Every day we read people saying there shouldn't be in built-up areas.
The vans shouldn't be in built-up areas, is it?
In built-up areas. It's something I read on...
I don't care where they put the Go Safe vans if they catch people speeding. I have no problem with those vans.
I'm delighted to see them. I'm delighted to see them. Huh? They appear on Ballincollig not often enough.
No, but if you've got one on the South Ring, right, and it's catching people, it's just before the first slip there for Douglas West. Douglas East, the back village, it's always there. So if you catch somebody there, that's a good thing, right? Because the chances are they're the same people that would be speeding on country roads. You know, they're just dangerous drivers. You know, they're just breaking the law. So catch them. What's the big deal? Now, what they do with the money is another thing. You know, they certainly don't seem to be putting it into the state of our roads. So that's another day's argument, I suppose.
Well, you see, that's supposed to be paying a road tax for. Not for penalty for bad behaviour, should be used for something else. But our roads should be looked after by our road tax, not by fines from speeding drivers, from mad drivers. But we got to change people's attitude, these people who think they know it all, these people and governments. Yeah. They have think tanks as to how they can solve this problem. Right, drop the speed limit. That's going to really impact on it.
But hold on a second. I want to drive at 120 in 120 zone. I want to drive at 100 in 100 zone. I want to do 80 in an 80.
Yes,
why
exactly.
would you be penalising us that want to get from A to B smartly?
That's exactly my point. But they don't seem to see that, right, that the 99% of people that do things properly, and I'm in that 99%, who do things properly, who observe the rules of the road.
We're sure, dropping 100 to 80, for instance, isn't going to stop your man who did 194 and 100. It's not
going to stop any of these mad drivers. But you see, this is the point I'm making. We're only here about these cases as if they're isolated cases, right? But they're not isolated.
It's happening every day. Yeah, it's happening every day.
And in a minute, when I get out the straight road, you'll see the same thing. People bombing out to stop the straight road at 100 and 120, versus 40 and 60 all the ways out.
Okay. Just one final point. I wonder, do you agree or disagree? If you put cameras on traffic lights that pick up registration and the face of the driver, have you noticed more and more people now are running through red lights? They still have time, they think, to go through the red light, even though it's changed.
So if
there's a camera catching them, aren't they likely to be the same people at speed? So if they're caught at a traffic lights,
more than likely, it's a bad behaviour.
Yeah, okay.
It's a bad behaviour.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Text 0868 104 106.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
There's an interesting text here. It's a kind of a tip-off one, if you like. Do you ever see people who flash lights to oncoming traffic to say that there's a Gatso van ahead or there's a checkpoint, slow down, or the case maybe warning other motorists? Is that the right thing to do? Should we do that? Should we flash lights warning oncoming motorists? Should we just leave them to their own devices and let them get caught? Or is it almost like this secret code, or almost like a Masonic handshake, but we have it, us motorists do it for each other? Your thoughts on that? Should you just let them to their own devices, and if they're going to be caught, they're going to be caught? Text 0868 104 106. I was reminded of that from this text, actually. Morning, Neil. I just wanted to tip off your listeners. There were four traffic wardens working in McCurtain Street on Friday night at 8:30 p.m. They were giving out many parking fines. I think McCurtain Street's a bit of a hot spot for illegal parking. I remember doing something on that a couple of months ago, but just bear it in mind. Giving out mucho parking fines on McCurtain Street on Friday night. So it's a bit of a tip off, if you like. Not just looking out for speeding cameras or guarded checkpoints. We'll have traffic warden alert as well. So keep those going. Mind you, going into town brings its risk and perils. I'm afraid I have more to report for you. And this, of course, on Friday night. I don't have video footage, but I do have a Garda acknowledgement of the events. They said they were investigating the robbery of a man on Oliver Plunkett Street on Friday. The male was assaulted during the course of an incident and received medical attention at the scene by ambulance personnel, and investigations are ongoing. So that's from Garda Press. There was some kind of a set to and an assault of a man on Oliver Plunkett Street, and some people observed it. I brought my American cousin into town on Friday night for a couple of drinks and a bit of food. We exited the taxi only to find a couple of fellas beating the life out of each other on Oliver Plunkett Street. They were clearly off their heads on something. Drugs, I guess. I've never been so ashamed of my city with my American tourists cousins witnessing this. There was no Garda presence in town whatsoever that I could see. The tension in the air in Cork is palpable now, and I could sense my cousins were uneasy. Something just has to change. I think really it's very hard to be defending those who are involved in, say, for instance, the rostering of An Garda Síochána. It gets harder and harder to have the backs for An Garda when time after time after time I'm hearing of no boots on the ground, particularly on a Friday night. Surely there would have been some sort of Garda allocation, not cars driving through town now. I'm talking about actual members of An Garda Síochána. Please, somebody tell me that on a Friday night or a Saturday night or after the events of Sunday week past, that there is physical presence on our roads. I was walking up Princes Street onto Oliver Plunkett Street on Friday about 7:30 when I saw a lad that was begging, being beaten up badly by another fella just by the kebab shop. The attacker was shouting, "Where's my money? Where's my money?" He gave him kick after kick, punch after punch. Then bizarrely, the attacker says to him, "You gave me AIDS. You gave me AIDS." You could hear the fear in the victim's voice on the ground, shouting back to stop. When the attacker left, the victim was left lifeless on the ground. The Gardaí must have had a minimum of 10 calls about it. I could see and hear people ringing them on the street, and none to be seen where I was anyway. I saw the attacker walking back up Winthrop Street. I tried to ring the Gardaí, but I couldn't get through. Eventually, the 999 operator said, "Just keep repeating, the Gardaí are busy." The 999 operator just kept repeating to me, "The Gardaí are busy, please hold the line." This is an emergency number, isn't it? Not being answered? It's frightening to think you could be attacked and no Gardaí will come in time to save you. You need to highlight this on the radio. The city is getting more lawless as the years go on, and it's clear to see. Now, it's good to get people who witness these things and actually describe them by email or by text, because other than that, you would just hear investigating a robbery of a man, male was assaulted during the course of the incident, received medical attention, investigations are ongoing. And thank you to Garda Press for that. But when you hear witnesses who actually saw it, whether it's the chap who was there with his American cousins or the man just literally walking down Oliver Plunkett Street at 7:30, you get more of a sense of what's going on, don't you? And unfortunately, that could happen any day, any night. And a lot of it, of course, maybe if we had dozens and dozens and dozens of Gardaí on our streets regularly, just walking Oliver Plunkett Street, walking the Grand Parade, walking Winthrop Street, walking Oliver Plunkett Street, walking Mark Curtin Street, walking Merchants Quay, walking the Paul Street Plaza. I don't know. Would it make a difference? Well, it wouldn't hurt. Would it hurt? Couldn't hurt. Text 0868104106. Malcolm, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm very well. And I think, in fairness to you, it was your niece, Chloe, who originally got in touch with me this morning. She wanted to congratulate you. Do you know why?
That's right. Thanks very much, Chloe. Yeah.
One year of sobriety. Is it today? 1 year sober?
It was actually Thursday.
Well done. How are you feeling about that? How are you feeling about that?
Great. Feels very positive, you know. I'm just very proud of myself, you know. Come 1 year, like, you know. It's been amazing, like, you know. The 12 months, like, it's some change. It's some swap in life, you know.
I know. And it's lovely chatting with you for a lot of different reasons. One of them is we had Darren on the air on Friday, and he's going into Coonvora this morning. We've set it up for him for a few months. But I suppose the last thing you thought on a Monday morning is you'd be talking on radio a couple of hours later. But here we are. You said, or the lads tell me that you said one morning you just woke up and knew you had enough. Is that right?
Yeah, I had enough. I was going through so much pain, you know, the anguish. Like, it was just unbelievable. Every day it was like the same, you know, Groundhog Day. I'd just wake up, I'd be dying, you know, from the drink. Staying up all night, you know, sometimes like into the next day, and just have nothing to do, you know, and just drink, you know. And that went on for quite a while, you know, Neil.
Was it going on for years? Did it just get worse over time, kind of thing?
Yeah. I was kind of drinking as a teenager growing up, you know, in the 90s and stuff, you know, with the lads, and I thought that was just a normal thing to do, you know, at that age, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't see what the future held for me, like.
No, you don't as a teenager. You're not worried about the future.
No. But when I got into my, you know, late 20s, 30s, then you know, I was drinking. I was still drinking. You know, I didn't want to stop. Basically, I didn't want to stop.
And were you holding down a job, relationships, family life? And was all that okay?
I went through jobs. I lost jobs over drink. Many jobs over drink. You know, couldn't get up.
You wouldn't turn up. Couldn't get out of bed.
Couldn't get out of bed. It was just the drink had a hold of me. You know. It was horrible, like, you know. We're into my 30s then, late 30s, like, you know, and it was 2017 then I had a stroke, you know.
You think it was drink-related? Yeah,
I'd say it was drink-related. They said they couldn't tell me what happened, but I'd say it was definitely drink, all right, you know, because I was staying up all night, and I remember one morning I was out chatting to a neighbour. My legs were like feathers, and I just dropped, and they said I was deprived of oxygen for 60 seconds.
Wow.
I went to the hospital, and, yeah, it was a stroke. And
you recovered from that, thankfully.
I did, yeah. Well, the one in my hands now is a bit, it's not functioning as well as the right hand, you know. I have a bit of fatigue. I get tired fast, you know. If I was doing something, I'd have to have a break, you know.
But if that was in 2017, it wasn't enough of a wake-up call for you to address your drinking, no?
No. I went along getting better, like, you know, getting stronger for myself, and so I just had drink on my head, you know, drink on the brain, you know. I remember there was the Beast in the East, you know, that time.
Yeah, I do. I remember.
I was just needed a drink. I was going out on the ice and all, like, looking for an off license to be opened, you know.
Was it home drinking you were doing, or was a lot of it done in pubs or what?
Not so much. Pubs, it was just kind of home. I'd go to the pub for one or two, all right, but it would continue then in houses, you know, my own house, other people's houses.
And would you just only have the one or two in a pub, like, so that everybody would see you were just a couple of pints man and that was it, kind of thing?
Not really. No. Like, it was just go with the flow, having two games of pool, continue on the drinking, the party, whatever after that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
it was crazy, like, you know.
And was there ever times when you did manage to stop for a period?
Yeah, I think the longest I got was a month, and it was at home, and I was demented. You know, walking around, I had nothing to do myself. You know, I didn't know life. You know, as it is, like, I didn't know what to do with myself. Yeah. I was walking around, I was like a dry drunk, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
I was walking around, just demented, and I didn't know nothing about anything about air or anything like that at that stage. And so I just went back out, doing my best, you know. That's all I knew, how to drink, and stuff like that, you know. It was just Rabbits, you know, I was just focused on one thing, you know.
I know, there was nothing else in you. And so, like, I suppose there were people close to you that were trying to encourage you to stop or cut back or get help, yeah?
Otherwise, my family there, like, you know, I want to thank them as well, you know, mum and dad, like, and especially my sister, you know, Melissa, she did an awful lot for me, you know, in my recovery. But at the start, they were trying their best to encouraged me to, you know, but like, if it was going on one air out the other, I'd be good for 1 or 2 weeks and I'd go back at it again, you know. I didn't think there was anything wrong. I was selfish, you know. I wasn't thinking of others. I was just thinking of myself, you know.
There did reach a point then, because you were saying you knew there was a life out there, but you didn't know how to get to it. But you kind of did. You knew it was the alcohol that was keeping you from your life, really. Yeah,
you knew. Yes, it was the alcohol, yeah.
You knew there was a better life there, if you could kick this. So how did you start that journey then, of stopping? Was it just cold turkey or what?
I went cold turkey first. I got up one morning and that was it. I just stopped cold turkey. I was obviously getting better, you know, in the weeks. And I was approached by a person. And there was a place, a treatment centre, you know, for, like, to deal with alcohol. And I went in there.
How long? Three months?
3 months, yeah. It was 3 months. And I was pure apprehensive. Like, I didn't know what to expect, you know. When I went in there first, I was nervous. I was panicky. You know, I wanted to go away at one stage in my own head, you know, my head was telling me that. But I stuck it out, you know. I stuck it out.
And then you would have met other people, of course. You know, Brenda was telling us this on the air weeks ago. And you realised, actually, you know something? I'm not the only person in the world that's been living with this or struggling with this. There was power in that, wasn't there?
Oh, yes. Eventually, otherwise, yeah, definitely. Yeah, but like they couldn't do enough for me there, like in the treatment centre, you know. But they could see me getting, they could see me getting better, you know, and better. And eventually, then I was let go, you know. I was out my own devices, and the minute I came out, I went straight to an AA meeting.
Straight to AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. First meeting, was that difficult?
It was strange. You know, but I know I had to do it, you know, and I was like, from there on, I think I went to, like, I was at the start, I was going to 15, 16 meetings a week, you know.
Why would you need that many a week? Do you have to stay in the kind of Alcoholics Anonymous zone or frame of mind, go all of the time, sometimes twice a day, because it's very, you're at a fragile stage, is it?
I was at a fragile stage, you know. I needed to get him in, like, you know. I know it's a lot now, but look, it worked for me, you know. That's what I said.
Yeah.
It worked for me. I still go to two meetings a day now, you know, today, like.
Do you?
You know, and it helps me an awful lot.
Every day, without fail?
Yeah, every day, without fail.
Nice. You got a meeting at some stage. Have you been already? No, not yet.
No, there's one o'clock.
Right. And another one this evening then, is it?
There's one at 8:30, yeah.
So and that routine, it works for you?
Yeah, yeah. And then doing one or two courses there as well. I think I had to build my life back again. I didn't know the person I was without alcohol, you know, Neil?
Yeah. Do you like him? Do you like that person?
I do. Yeah, I do, yeah. Do you know
I'm trying all my life to like myself. You're very lucky if you do. That's one of my biggest struggles.
I couldn't look in the mirror, Neil. I swear I couldn't look in the mirror. Like, I couldn't look at myself for Jesus, years, you know. No, we can look in the mirror.
And you're proud of what's looking back at you?
I am indeed, yeah.
Well done. That is an amazing achievement, man. Well done.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So it's still, but it's still tough, though. You know, you have to be alert to the temptations all the time, and you're dealing with it.
I'm dealing with that. Yes, I think it's the acceptance of knowing you're not going to drink again. You know, I think at the start, it was kind of I was thinking of other people. What other people think of me? You know, I was thinking that I was getting like, why am I thinking that way? So I had to conquer and get rid of that. And I had to accept drink is no good for me. It's toxic. It's deadly, you know? So once I got that, I could get on with my daily life, you know, and recovery, you know? And Jesus, it's amazing, because I was kind of afraid of that thinking, you know? And the Friday, you know, the party, the weekend and all that, that's all stopped now, you know. I don't think of that no more. You know, I've positive look.
Yeah, and the Monday morning with the blue skies and the sun shining.
Oh, beautiful.
No sick head, no hangover, no desperate for a drink, no planning your week around drink, all gone. You're enjoying life. Wow.
I'm enjoying life now. I'm loving life, you know. It's what a change, you know. And I have to thank Alcoholics Anonymous as well, you know, for this as well, like, you know. But I couldn't have done it without them, you know.
I know what you mean, yeah. And also, Chloe, who actually got in touch with me. You're Chloe. Much loved, boy. And I also see you have a son, Bobby, who's very proud of you as well.
Yeah, my son is 7.5, yes. He's very proud, yes. Yeah, he's on the spectrum, like.
Loves his dad, though, yeah.
We do, yeah. Spending time with him was amazing, you know, properly, you know, because when I was drinking, to be honest, I was just thinking of drink, you know?
I know. Now you're living
life. Couldn't wait to hand him back to go drinking and, you know, and like I knew when I drank that I was doing this to myself, but I just couldn't help it.
And have you got past all of that guilt now, do you mind me asking?
I know there's nothing I can do about it, but that guilt is not there anymore, you know? I know it was the alcohol. You know, every day is something different every day, you know, like every day is not the same, you know, I can go up there now, you know, and do things, you know, like I remember being stuck in here for weeks, you know, drinking, place untidy, turning the phone off, hiding, all this carry on, you know, getting taxis up there, off license, couldn't walk, I was getting fierce panic attacks. You know, when I stopped the drinking, you know, no. I mean, they were bad. I thought I was going to die. I was going to get a heart attack. It was horrendous.
That's the powerful addiction that alcohol is. I mean, there are people that go into rehab and into treatment and they go through all sorts of hallucinations and the DTs and awful struggle.
Oh, it's horrendous.
Mentally and physically. A nightmare is the life.
Yeah.
Listen, here's Chloe's original text. I'd love if you could give my uncle a congratulations. He's 1 year sober since Thursday. We are all so proud of him, as we have seen how hard it was for him, from losing everything to getting everything back on track. Malcolm, well done. All of our love, especially from your family, but particularly from, obviously, Chloe, from your son Bobby, and your mam Kay. They're all so proud of you.
Yes, thanks for Chloe. Like, you know, she's brilliant. Like, you know, Chloe is very good at all that stuff. And I want to thank my mum and dad as well, you know.
Well done.
And especially my sister, you know, she's been a rock to me, like my brother, you know. And and thanks to my friends, you know, who are there to support me, you know. You know who they are. And Jesus, there's a lot of people as well I have to thank, you know. I didn't know who they are as well. Jesus, you know. It's this journey has been amazing, Neil. I'm going to keep.
You're only starting
working,
out.
You know?
You're only starting out. Well done, Malcolm. Fair play.
That's it.
Thanks so much for coming on air this morning. Last thing you thought you'd
no
be doing.
No problem, Neil.
Thanks for your openness and honesty. Fair play. Look after yourself and well done. No year problem. One.
All right.
Deadly.
Cheers.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
Take care. Text 086-8104-106. I love people's stories. I love when they share their own life stories, and I know that everybody's got a story in them, and good luck to Malcolm. Can I just say, you know, some wonderful things do happen in pub settings. I got a lovely email in this morning. I just wanted you to know that on Saturday night, the Harp Bar held a fundraising event for Cork Missing Persons and Recovery Services. Anya, the licensee of the pub, and all of her staff held a very important and successful lip sync event and raised around €8,000 on the night for that charity, who are totally dependent on public funds as they do not receive any funding whatsoever from government funding. Think about that. Cork Missing Persons and Recovery Service don't get a penny from the state. Those brave men and women volunteers who at times give up on their own lives, put their own lives at risk to recover and return loved ones to their respective families whose lives have been lost. No need to mention my name, but it would be nice to congratulate everyone who took part and organised it. And for each and everyone who donated and supported this great cause, absolutely, I 100% concur with every word you're saying. To be able to raise €8,000 on a night is an incredible achievement. If you told me 1,500 or 2 grand, I would have said, well done. €8,000 for Cork Missing Persons and Recovery from all of the patrons and the staff at the Harp Bar in Ballyfihan, Toker. Actually, I'm not 100% sure whether it is Ballyfihan or Toker. I'm quite sure people tell me. But anyway, well done to Anya and the Harp Bar on that one. Okay, I'm under a little bit of pressure. I'm going to do some more shout-outs, if you don't mind. I don't know that I'm going to have time for any more calls, guys. My sincerest apologies. Back with our Monday Munchies after this.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Okay, it's Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and Luso. Some quick shout outs if you don't mind. Help us feel spunky instead of feeling grumpy. We don't mind looking chunky and a little bit lumpy. Just once we have the munchie, because then we'd all be funky. That's from all the staff of the Alzheimer's Society in Blackrock. As well as that, to everybody at Suite 24 in the Cork Clinic, morning to Lisa P, Sharon, Tressa, and all of the gang. To everybody at the South Infirmary Pharmacy Department, they'd love to share the sweet treats from Luso. The lads in the Craftsman Joinery in Watergrass Hill are on board this morning. So is everybody at the Cutthroat Barber in Corraheen and Sheehan Heating and Plumbing. To everybody at Regatta Ireland's Warehouse in Ringaskiddy, it'd be a super treat. Cheese, the Cargoline Cheese Company for Luso, please. Morning to you all. Autism Assistant Dogs in Little Island, a busy morning. Their latest class of puppy training is going on. To the CDYS in Mallow Youth Centre who are listening, the Ops Office with the National Beauty Distribution and Blarney Business Park are always listening. Sports Gear Director on the Tremor Road are on board. Cotter Building and Maintenance in Ringaskiddy would love the treat. And just a few more. The Baby Sensory Class at Ballincollig Carrig Centre for all the hungry new mums. My dad had a fall in the Mall this morning and a very kind taxi driver dropped him to the Mercy. Would you please consider him? His name is Paul Lynn. Well done. And a big shout out to Paul, helping a man who fell down on the Mall. Everybody at International Trading on the Tramore Road will love the Munchies. Tocvura HSC in the Old Yall Road, servicing the community in Mayfield. Bow Wow Beauty in Donnybrook Commercial. Everybody at John Gray Auto Services. And finally for now, everybody at Method Fitness in Blackpool, including Hazel. Happy birthday for your 40th. I often worry about giving out the age of a birthday, but I fear that people don't want it known. So it's out now. My apologies for it. So, have we a winner for the Monday Munchies today, courtesy of ourselves and Luso? It's like 15 delicious cakes. No two the same. It's a lovely, lovely prize this week. And thank you to Carol and Ian at lusocork.ie. And our winners for Monday Munchies today, Nurture Child Care in Blackrock. So for the staff, don't know if you're allowed to give sugary treats to the kids, but who's going to know? But certainly you can share it with the mams and dads when they're collecting. Or maybe there's enough staff to go around. So well done. Thanks for listening at Nurture Child Care in Blackrock. Luso, winners today for the Monday Munchies. We'll pick up all conversations in the morning. Enjoy the sunshine. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.